Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Moran Monday to you all. A minute and 15 seconds past the hour. You know, this is what happens when you think you've got a show all lined up. Something comes along, especially when it's Moran Monday. You know how it is with Morans. Morans just can't help trying to get into the act right at the last minute. You think you're down to all the clown cars out of the clown. Are all the clowns out of the clown car? They're all running around the rings of the circus. But no, there's always one more clown, right? And thus we find ourselves at the beginning of this Moran Monday edition of the Horn. And we got a problem. We'll get there. We'll get there. Hey, who knew? Guess what? We're on terrestrial radio. This has nothing to do with Morans. No, Lottie from the chat room sent me a link last night. We are actually running from midnight to 3 a.m. on a very low power station in none other than my beloved Hotlanta, Georgia. Stabbing a stake into the heart of right-wing conservatism in Hotlanta. Really, a serious shout-out to Zip Radio, ZYPRadio.com, and all its many listeners. That's green 1640 a.m. on your dial down there in the Hotlanta area. Apparently, on weekdays from midnight to 3 a.m., by Jove, we're on terrestrial radio. I can't imagine how that works out. You know, so, I don't know. Maybe it's somebody sitting there with the dump button going, oh, I did it again! But it's thrilling. So shout out to Green 1640 listeners. Shoot me an email. Let me know you're out there. You know, this is all just like Romper Room. I can see you and you and you and you. And I need to see the Green 1640 listeners. So thanks for carrying. Thanks for carrying. I hope we don't get you in terrible, terrible, terrible trouble, because you know, occasionally the one of the magic words slips through. Just saying. But it's incidental contact, right? No harm, no foul. Yeah. No, it is Moran Monday on the Horn. Well, back up. It's felt like Moran Weekend. You don't want to live in my world. Really. Starting with Friday, when I told you that the month of June would be fraught with absences. Nonetheless, I still got an email saying, I can't support this program if you're not more punctual about your attendance. Jeebus. How many? I've spent, what, the last 2 weeks saying, gonna be a weird June. Not gonna be on the air a lot, but still I get really cheap. So anyway, these things happen. But anyway, so starting Friday it was weird and got weirder. I got called out to a meeting on Friday. And then on Saturday the electricity went wild. Agnes got knocked several feet backwards by either the breaker box, the water heater, or a combination of the two. And then I spent the remainder of the weekend trying to figure out why. Now, getting me to try to figure out why about anything electrical is, oh, I don't know, like trying to get a fundamentalist to figure out how it is that virgins have babies. Okay? So, but that's what, I've got a very dear friend who, in fact, came in, wired in the whole internet all the way to the end of the studio and has helped massively with the telephones and getting all of that working. And so he's my crisis call. And I learned to use a voltage meter over the weekend without hurting myself. Now, that's not to say I didn't have my house helmet on and my knee pads and my elbow pads and my Velcroed shoes and everything, because I am baffled by many things. Wipe the oatmeal off my chin, you know, that kind of stuff. But spent the better part of 2 days going all over my breaker box, going, why doesn't this work? And why doesn't this work? And why doesn't this work? And by the time I was done, about half the house didn't have electricity. That's how good I am. And then toward the end of the afternoon yesterday, remember, this is a program, this is a radio network that hopes someday to proudly boast at the beginning of every program that no mountains were harmed in the making of it. Hopefully someday the horn will be completely off the grid. There will be no coal-fired electricity involved in any portion of the process of creating all of this. We'll be doing it on wind and solar. Those two free things provided by the universe. Of course, being really smart humans, we want to do it the hard way and dig death out of the ground to make electricity. But by the end of the day yesterday, my electrical and spiritual advisor and I were at sixes and sevens as to why one entire side of the breaker box appeared to be kaput. And just on the off chance that we might, but who would have thought of it? He says, Bob, take that voltmeter you have recently learned how to operate without hurting yourself, and put it up on them two big main Jesus legs coming into the box from the power company. I, of course, being the questing, inquisitive grasshopper that I am, said, now, why would we do that, Houston? Because I did. I felt like I was in a space capsule. I feel it was like something. It was like something out of the hillbilly version of Apollo 13. Just up there eating space food sticks and trying to fix electricity and not touch the electric while touching anything wet. You know, that kind of thing. He says, well, you know, I mean, it's down one. Just check. And lo and behold, the heavens parted, and the heavenly host descended, singing the hallelujah chorus, and there it was. I'd spent the better part of a day and a half, we both had, assuming that something was screwed up in here, when no, not at all. It was the fine folks at Coal Keeps the Lights On, clean coal electricity, those coal-buying sons of bitches at Appalachian Power, who bought, they engaged in the Catch-22 equivalent of buying eggs in Malta for 4 cents apiece and selling them in Pianosa for 3 cents apiece, and everybody has a share and everybody makes a profit. Huh! But no, that's where it was. These guys who have had a 100% rate increase over the last 4 years, such that there's practically no one in my area who doesn't have a $400 a month power bill now, were shorting me. They were shorting us. I don't mean like open short, like pouring, no. No, I mean shorting like a little street dealer who tries to run one past the guy one level up the chain. Yeah, it's all there. You can count it if you want to, but you don't need to, because, you know, it's me, and we've been talking, we've been friends for a long, long time. It's all there. Yeah, it wasn't all there. So there I am floating around in the Buzzard One spaceship, calmly sipping on Tang and vodka, and find out that the reason that my water heater has fried, the reason that ABCD wasn't working, was because Appalachian Power was shorting me 100 amps of service. You know, this is like when the little street dealer comes, yeah, there's supposed to be $200 in there. Hey, there's only $100 in here. Yeah, I wonder, must have had a hole in the bag. That's what it was. But to their credit, I called and said, hey. And they had a guy out here, and now we're getting 200 amps of service, and it's absolutely lovely. Of course, before he took the thing off the meter, he said, now, you understand, if I don't see two dead legs here, you got a problem inside, and it's not my issue. I said, you just go ahead and test. So that was my weekend. I hope you got to relax some, because I didn't. But that kind of gave me an idea that today would be an interesting Moran Monday. And interesting it is, at the very least. Okay, by the way, before we get into the meat of things, a gentle reminder. I'm going to be gone a lot beginning tomorrow. Tomorrow, Wednesday and Thursday, is a bust. I might be able to sneak behind the microphone on Thursday. We're not sure yet. Tomorrow and Wednesday, at least, are done, because we're headed to D.C., to try to speak out in favor of the Environmental Protection Agency, simply because they've taken a modest interest in not watching the hillbillies all die all at once. Thursday, like I said, is dodgy. Friday is the premiere in West Virginia of Robert Kennedy's, the film featuring Robert Kennedy. It's a film by Bill Haney called The Last Mountain. And it is generating quite a bit of buzz around and about. It had an excellent opening weekend in New York and D.C. This past weekend, which means it will probably get picked up in a lot more theaters. I think it's pretty cool that after the opening weekend in Washington and New York, it goes for its second opening weekend. L.A.? Nope. Frisco? Nope. Seattle? No. Paris, sorry, goes to Nashville, Tennessee. Because after all, the music that has made that city what it is came out of these mountains. And so there is a blood link between the Appalachians and country music's home church, mother church at the Opry. It'll be opening on the 9th, which is Thursday, at the Belcourt Theater in Nashville. If you're anywhere near Nashville, I'm told that you probably won't get in on the 9th, but you might get in on the 10th or the 11th or maybe the 12th. You want to see this film. You really do. If you've ever wondered, you know, what in the hell is Bob talking about when he says that Coal River Mountain Watch is the hardest working, bravest people he knows? Well, you'll get a little idea for it when you see this film. So it's going to premiere in West Virginia, in Charleston, on Friday night. And I am obliged to be there. I would be there even were I not obliged to be there. Because, among other things, I'm somebody now. I have had my picture, by God, in the New York Times. Really? No. Because there was a review, I guess, on Friday. There was a review of the film in the New York Times. And, yes, indeed, as we mentioned in conversation on Thursday, my photo is the screen grab for one of the trailers. And there it was, featured prominently down the left side of the New York Times online edition. Now, granted, it didn't say, hey, everybody, look over here. There's that Bob Kincaid. But it was definitely me. And so my teeny tiny itsy bitsy little ego, thought I was going to say something else, didn't you, got Well, I guess we're going to leave stroked out of it. My little itsy-bitsy ego got a little itsy-bitsy boost, and I finally understood what it was that Steve Martin was hollering about in The Jerk when he said, the new phone book's here, the new phone book's here. Hey, look, everybody, I'm somebody. That's me, Bob Somebody Kincaid. Although, if you watch the trailer, every bit of what's in the film is in the trailer, as far as I'm concerned. Where it concerns me, I should say. And if you watch the trailer, you will find that Andy Warhol's 15 minutes of fame has been reduced to about 3.5 seconds, at least where I'm concerned. So anyway, the premiere is Friday evening. Saturday and Sunday is nothing but mad packing. And Monday, we blow out the door, headed for Minneapolis, Minnesota, and Netroots Nation, where we will, all of us, Clan Kincaid, be doing some missionary work on behalf of Coal River Mountain Watch and the ongoing struggle to end the single greatest human rights environmental crisis in the United States, period. The film will also be screened there, and I can't wait to see what Netroots Nation attendees have to say about it. That'll be on Friday. So anyway, we will be gone all week long. The reason I'm going over this at such detail is it was really frustrating to get the, you're not paying enough attention to your attendance. You don't get a financial bonus. That's flustering. Especially in light of the fact that I'm not whining, that I've never had a vacation from this program. Never. The longest time I've ever spent away from the program was the time I spent burying my father. Ooh, what a high time that was. But I want everybody to know that the schedule is really, really dodgy. And I want to remind you that you can get the schedule over at headonradionetwork.com and follow it along, even as you imagine some sort of little picture of a minivan going across America. Now, will there be broadcasting from Netroots Nation? I'd like for there to be, but there is no guarantee. We'll have to, that's one of those play-it-by-ears moments where that's because we just don't know. I don't know what their Radio Row is going to look like. Then we'll just see. And so what you do is you follow me on Facebook and or Twitter, and I will post there as quickly as I know if we're going to do a show on any of the given evenings. Okay? This just in from Sandra. Radio? Terrestrial radio? Well, that's just great, Bob, but can I still say the F word? So far, we have received no complaints. So I would say F away, Sandra. Somehow that didn't come out quite right. Jim, good evening, Count Volta, or is it Galvani? No, by God, I am Tesla. Well, except for the fact that he was a notorious, sickening anti-Semite, but the genius, yeah, that's me. Wile E. Coyote, super genius. I like the sound of that. So then, just so you know, everything gets kind of normal for about 5 days. And then on the 28th of June, it's off to the Prism West Virginia Summer Academy, which will be carried live in its entirety. You know, something on the order of 8 hours of broadcast, in-depth American history per day on the June 29th and 30th and July 1st, and then July 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and then July 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th. Man, oh man, are you going to get some history. So be there for that. I mean, what do I have to do to convince you that you really, really want to be there for the Prism West Virginia American History Seminar? Do I have to do this? You know what? I got to do this. You want to know why you want to be there for the Prism West Virginia American History Seminar? This is why.
It appears Carolyn may need to brush up on her American history. She visited the Old North Church today here in Boston, the focal point of Paul Revere's historic ride, but it sounds like she got a bit confused on the details.
He who warned the British that they weren't going to be taking away our arms by ringing those bells and making sure as he's riding his horse through town to send those warning shots and bells that we were going to be secure and we were going to be free.
Yeah. Those warning shots and bells. He rode through Boston and out into the countryside, apparently. Dressed like something like out of the Ziegfeld Follies of 1937, warning shots and bells. And stopped by to warn the British that we were coming. And you're not going to be taking away those arms, King George. We've got a passel of them up there at Pepperidge Farm. Jesus. The only antidote to this kind of stupid... And, you know, I generally resist nominating Sarah Palin, Mussolini, Caribou Barbie, Godzilla from Wasilla, what have you. What rhymes with Arizona once she moves? We're going to have a problem. No, she's past mistress. She's outside the competition, beyond the pale.
The whining Mona from Arizona.
The whining Mona from Arizona, yeah, right. The whining Mona from Arizona. Well, that's a start. By the way, Horn Southeast correspondent Matt Osborne is in the studio with us this evening. That was him. He will be joining us on the trip for the press conference as well as heading to Netroots Nation with us and documenting all of it in his own inimitable video style. But the only way to combat that kind of stupid is to know the real thing. You may, I don't need to know that, because, you know, that's just her, and she does that kind of crazy stuff. Well, let me offer you something else. You know, I told you a little bit on Thursday about this March on Blair Mountain thing, and I've got some email to share with you along those lines as well. In case you think it's just Mussolini, in case you think it's just Michelle Bachmann, in case you think that it's just Herman Cain, I want to offer you the historical stylings of one Diane Kish of Sharples, West Virginia, a letter to the editor of the Beckley Register Herald, recently printed. Now, Ms. Kish apparently doesn't like the little march on Blair that's being reenacted even as we speak. By the way, in case you were wondering what we feared would be the case, it has indeed turned into the case. If you go and look at the story about it on WVGazette.com, you'll see all the marchers starting out in the warm, warm, hot June sunshine and leading the way a banner from the United Mine Workers of America, who want to save Blair Mountain, just none of the others. Yeah, indeed. So anyway, this is a letter to the editor about the reenactment of the march. From Ms. Diane Kish of Sharples, West Virginia. It is 1921 all over again in the coal fields of West Virginia. The only change is the year is 2011. I guess we'll sort out the math later. Once again, the federal government, along with special interest groups who love trees, bugs, and dirt more than humans, are having a fake battle of Blair Mountain March. Once again? Really? I didn't know it had been done before. Well, it has been done before, back in the late 90s. That's when United Mine Workers and Massey coal miners spit in the face of Judy Bonds. Of course, Countrywood and Hollywood are also involved. The battle has changed from guns, bombs, and airplanes to big government and environmental justice. We are not the original miners who marched in 1921, who sacrificed living in tents and doing without to start the United Mine Workers of America. Anybody want to diagram that? This woman is obviously a disciple of Caribou Barbie. They sacrificed living in tents and doing without to start the United Mine Workers of America. So, in other words, because they started the United Mine Workers of America, they could no longer live in tents and do without? Who knows? Morans. It is, after all, by the way, did I mention? Yeah, it's Moran Monday. Yeah.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know. Morons.
Right. Morons. So, let's continue with this, the epistle of Diane Kish of Sharples, West Virginia. We are not, okay, so we get that. No. The descendants of those blessed miners are opposed to the mockery by the environmentalists who are claiming to want a historical site placed on top of the, one of the places of the famous battle. Yeah, I kind of had to raise the level of that for a minute. They want to place a historical site on top of the one. Yeah, never mind the fact that it's already historic, but and it's a historical site, so that means it's extra important. It's not just historic. I also don't want these groups to represent anything about mining, because in 1999 they caused a mine to shut down, destroying a community, uprooting families, and also closing schools and churches. That is how deep the disinformation runs in Appalachia. Because the only thing that destroys communities, uproots families, and closes schools and churches is mountaintop removal. And we have a whole list of communities that have been so eliminated. The most recent one being one that I told you about, Lindytown. Yeah. Anyway, Diane Kish continues. Let's get ready. Remember how I told you that one onion piece, man passionate defender of Constitution that exists only in his imagination, is far too close to home for any good? Here's the proof. Maybe Diane Kish can go ring some bells and tell the British that they're not going to be taking away our arms, nor our toenails. Diane Kish says, the Constitution says we have the right to... You know, I really should have told you to sit down, shouldn't I? Well, just sit down. It's that or just go ahead and take off all your clothes and prepare to run screaming into the yard. You've got your choice. I think the neighbors would probably prefer the sit-down-and-strap-in Bill Hicks approach. Peace be upon him. The Constitution says we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No, it doesn't, by God. It says we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. No, Diane Kish has apparently been paying attention to Herman Cain or Mussolini or Michelle Bachmann. You know, that whole, it's American history, it's American history too, kind of, oh, Jeebus. The Constitution says we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This, see what happens when you get caught in your own bit? This is what our families battled for in 1921. The right to work where they wanted, the right to live from they wanted. I'm just reading it, folks. This is Diane Kish's, this is her art. The right to work where they wanted, the right to live from they wanted, safe minds, better wages, and health care. I think Agnes is hitting the liquor, because I'd be in it. And health care. Really? 1921, health care. The EPA and groups like the ACLU want to destroy the American dream our miners fought for and still have a right to today. A lot of the miners were immigrants from different countries. You know what America is based on. The opposition wants to rob us of our livelihood, energy, health care, not Obamacare, and degrade this country into a third world power with everything green, forgetting the red blood shed for our freedom to work and live in a free state, signed Diane Kish Shorples. You can go to register-herald.com and search for Our Readers Speak. It's from a few days ago, around June the 3rd. And you can see this letter for yourself in all its glory. I promise you, I did not make that up. You know my passion for Mark Twain. Well, this is one of those moments where you just want to see Diane Kish, but only at a distance. So, I was reminded because of the, and you know, we're talking about me here, the absolute disbelief that struck me upon reading Diane Kish of Sharple's letter. This is, after all, Moran Monday. And the part about the Constitution says we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I really don't have to remind you that's in the Declaration of Independence, not the Constitution. Right? I didn't think I did. Put me in mind of Mr. Samuel Clemens. This is not a long piece. But it is so apropos to the moment. I did not take temporary editorship of an agricultural paper without misgivings. Neither would a landsman take command of a ship without misgivings. But I was in circumstances that made the salary an object. The regular editor of the paper was going off for a holiday, and I accepted the terms he offered and took his place. The sensation of being at work again was luxurious, and I wrought all the week with unflagging pleasure. We went to press, and I waited a day with some solicitude to see whether my effort was going to attract any notice. As I left the office toward sundown, a group of men and boys at the foot of the stairs dispersed with one impulse and gave me passageway, and I heard one or two of them say, "That's him." I was naturally pleased by this incident. The next morning I found a similar group at the foot of the stairs, and scattering couples and individuals standing here and there in the street and over the way, watching me with interest. The group separated and fell back as I approached, and I heard a man say, "Look at his eye." I pretended not to observe the notice I was attracting, but secretly I was pleased with it, and was purposing to write an account of it to my aunt. I went up the short flight of stairs and heard cheery voices and a ringing laugh as I drew near the door, which I opened and caught a glimpse of two young rural-looking men whose faces blanched and lengthened when they saw me, and then they both plunged through the window with a great crash. I was surprised. In about half an hour, an old gentleman with a flowing beard and a fine but rather austere face entered and sat down at my invitation. He seemed to have something on his mind. He took off his hat and set it on the floor and got out of it a red silk handkerchief and a copy of our paper. He put the paper on his lap, and while he polished his spectacles with his handkerchief, he said, Are you the new editor?" I said I was. "Have you ever edited an agricultural paper before?" "No," I said. "This is my first attempt."
"Very likely. Have you had any experience in agriculture practically?"
"No, I believe I have not."
"Some instinct told me so," said the old gentleman, putting on his spectacles and looking over them at me with asperity while he folded his paper into a convenient shape. "I wish to read you what must have made me have that instinct. It was this editorial. Listen, and see if it was you that wrote it. Turnips should never be pulled. It injures them. It is much better to send a boy up and let him shake the tree. Now, what do you think of that? For I really suppose you wrote it. Think of it. Well, I think it's good. I think it's sense. I have no doubt that every year millions and millions of bushels of turnips are spoiled in this township alone by being pulled in a half-ripe condition when, if they'd sent a boy up to shake the tree... Shake your grandmother. Turnips don't grow on trees. Oh, they don't they? Well, who said they did? The language was intended to be figurative, wholly figurative, and anybody that knows anything will know that I meant that the boy should shake the vine. Then this old person got up and tore his paper all into small shreds and stamped on them and broke several things with his cane and said I did not know as much as a cow, and then went out and banged the door after him and, in short, acted in such a way that I fancied he was displeased about something. But not knowing what the trouble was, I could not be any help to him. Pretty soon after this, a long, cadaverous creature with lanky locks hanging down to his shoulders and a weak stubble bristling from the hills and valleys of his face darted within the door and halted, motionless, with finger on lip, and head and body bent in listening attitude. No sound was heard. Still he listened. No sound. Then he turned the key in the door and came elaborately tiptoeing toward me till he was within long reaching distance of me, and when he stopped and after scanning my face with intense interest for a while, drew a folded copy of our paper from his bosom and said, "There, you wrote that. Read it to me. Quick, relieve me. I suffer." I read as follows. And as the sentences fell from my lips, I could see the relief come, and I could see the drawn muscles relax and the anxiety go out of the face and rest and peace steal over the features like the merciful moonlight over a desolate landscape. The guano is a fine bird, but great care is necessary in rearing it. It should not be imported earlier than June or later than September. In the winter, it should be kept in a warm place where it can hatch out its young. It is evident that we are to have a backward season for grain, therefore it will be well for the farmer to begin setting out his corn stalks and planting his buckwheat cakes in July instead of August. Concerning the pumpkin, this berry is a favorite with the natives of the interior of New England, who prefer it to the gooseberry for the making of fruitcake, and who likewise give it the preference over the raspberry for feeding cows as being more filling and fully as satisfying. The pumpkin is the only esculent of the orange family that will thrive in the north, except the gourd and one or two varieties of the squash. But the custom of planting it in the front yard with the shrubbery is fast going out of vogue, for it is now generally conceded that the pumpkin as a shade tree is a failure. Now, as the warm weather approaches and the ganders begin to spawn, the excited listener sprang toward me to shake hands and said, "There, there, that'll do. I know I'm all right now, because you've read it just as I did, word for word. But stranger, when I first read it this morning, I said to myself, I never believed it before, notwithstanding my friends kept me under watch so strict, but now I believe I am crazy. And with that, I fetched a howl that you might have heard 2 miles and started out to kill somebody, because, you know, I knew it would come to that sooner or later, and so I might as well begin. I read one of them paragraphs over and over again so as to be certain, and then I burned my house down and started. I have crippled several people and have got one fellow up a tree where I can get him if I want him. But I thought I would call in here as I passed along and make the thing perfectly certain. And now it is certain, and I tell you it is lucky for the chap that is in the tree. I should have killed him sure as I went back. Goodbye, sir, goodbye. You've taken a great load off my mind. My reason has stood the strain of one of your agricultural articles, and I know that nothing can ever unseat it now. Goodbye, sir." I felt a little uncomfortable about the cripplings and arsons this person had been entertaining himself with, for I could not help feeling remotely accessory to them. But these thoughts were quickly banished, for the regular editor walked in and thought to myself, "Now, if you'd gone to Egypt as I recommended you to, I might have had a chance to get my hand in, but you wouldn't do it, and here you are. I sort of expected you." The editor was looking sad and perplexed and dejected. Well, there you have it. Mark Twain, a portion of How I Edited an Agricultural Paper, written, yea, verily, in excess of probably 130 years ago, maybe 120, 110, when apparently The American people were every bit as intelligent as they are now. Hint, not a compliment. The Constitution says we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. So says Diane Kish. Paul Revere rode off like some sort of redneck wedding with a bunch of canned goods tied to the tail of his horse, just making as much racket as he possibly could to warn the British that we were coming. Oh, yeah, and no kidding, Mussolini not only refused to say that she didn't get it wrong, she still insists she has it right.
I got to ask you real quickly about that, though. You realize that you messed up about Paul Revere, don't you?
You know what? I didn't mess up about Paul Revere. Here's what Paul Revere did. He warned the Americans that the British were coming. The British were coming, and they were going to try to take our arms. So we got to make sure that we were protecting ourselves and shoring up all of our ammunition and our firearms so that they couldn't take it. But remember that the British had already been there, many soldiers, for 7 years in that area. And part of Paul Revere's ride, and it wasn't just one ride, he was a courier, he was a messenger. Part of his ride was to warn the British that were already there that, hey, you're not going to succeed. You're not going to take American arms. You are not going to beat our own well-armed persons, individual private militia that we have. He did warn the British. And in a shout-out, gotcha type of question that was asked of me, I answered candidly, and I know my American history.
Yes, you don't. Oh, Jesus. That's okay, Mussolini. Just repeat it a few more times, and you'll have at least 20 to 30% of the population in complete abject agreement with you. There'll be Paul Revere, I don't know, riding backwards on horses like one of those Lakota contraries or something. At your teabagging parties. You know, I look to the day when we can show video as well as run audio, because what was precious was the little hand gesture there where she, you know, sort of Shirley Temple-like took that fist and that little elbow and swung it. I was right, by Jiminy! You get that? Paul Revere's in the explanation now. In the explanation now, Paul Revere's purpose was at least in part to go to the British, jump up in there, get in their grill, as Jim Rome would say, and say, yeah, we got a lot of guns, MF-er. You want to come? Well, do you want to come get them? Do you feel lucky? Well, do you, Brit? Ah! Pain. Pain. But I'm not the only one hurting. Darlene just wrote in. As you know, I can't stand Sarah Palin, but I cringe listening to that. It hurts to listen to this stupidity. It is painful to listen to that. Yes, it is. Jim up there, out there, always ever at the ready, don't forget our precious bodily fluids! Oh, just give her a chance. Just give her a chance. Don't worry. By the time she gets to Nevada, there will be fluoridation issues, I'm sure. Oh, this in from Jan. Bob, Moran Monday starts with the person who suggested they could not support the horn because you're fighting the fight. Well, I won't go that far, Jan. But it was a little flabbergasting. Because, see, I mean, I really do. I take this stuff seriously. This is, you know, if you make $50 million a year at this, you get your 3 hours in, you chew up a good handful of OxyContin for the refreshing burst of flavor, and you go out to look for little Dominican boys to bugger like Limbaugh does. And it doesn't matter what kind of the crazy, half-psychotic, fully sociopathic lies that you tell on the air every day, because you're getting $50 million. But this is not entertainment. This is a little vision into our world here. Perhaps some analysis of the day's news. And above all, candor. Because I think in all the years I've done this now, I've never heard somebody call in trying to be impressive or trying to be special or above. No, that's the beauty of all of this, is the candor of it. It really is conversation radio. And it really is something that really happens and impacts my world. But the other thing that impacts my world is mountaintop removal. And I have to be in that struggle, or else I dare never say a word about it. You know, I joked about my 3.5 seconds of fame in the last mountain. That's only there because I had gone with Ferg on the 7th day of December 2009 to a rally in front of the Department of Environmental Permitting, Protection, for purposes of letting them know that we refuse to stand silent in the face of the predatory conduct of an unholy marriage between a state government and corporate goons. It's the only reason that's there. No camera crew showed up here at the mansion saying, Bob, could you put your coat on and come outside and scream for us a little bit? It's there because it's real. And far more real than anything I did or ever will do is the hard work that people like Bo Webb, who will be with us in D.C., has done. The hours upon hours upon hours, and the sweat and the tears and the fear and the intimidation that were the side-by-side companions of Judy Bonds' life ended all too soon by cancer's likely incubated in her body by none other than that coal industry that she refused to back away from. So many people, Maria Gonneau, Debbie Gerald, people who have put everything they have into a basic struggle for human rights, only to have the Diane Kishes of the world say, they care more about bugs than they do people. If that was the case, no one would be in this struggle. But that's the nature, that's the nature of how it goes down around here. And yes, there's a lot more morality to go into today. A ton of it. Like I said, I had everything all laid out for Moran Monday, and then Representative Anthony Weiner came along and nominated himself. Although I'm not sure if that's an appropriate statement on my part, because I really don't care. Now, had my daughters received a picture, then maybe he and I would have had words. But at this point in time, everything I understand is that it happened between consenting adults and is none of Andrew Breitbart's effing business. who, by the way, ran down and held an impromptu press conference ahead of Representative Wiener. An absolute frenzy of self-congratulatory, phony baloney. Well, this was a picture. He was actually masturbating. You get the idea. But there's a ton of content to get after. And if we get a show in on Thursday, this will be one of only two shows, or maybe only one show of the week. So, you know, your comments, this being Conversation Radio, are more than welcome. I will say, however, that this is, as I have mentioned, a very, very scary month for the Horn. Because time after time after time, we have learned that when I'm not behind the microphone, the contributions that keep this all going, go bye-bye. They just don't happen. Well, Bob's not behind the microphone. He must be out pricing the blue Buicks. Everything's apparently okay, so I don't need to contribute. That ain't the case. So let's put on a press this evening and try to take care of several days' worth, okay? Please. You know the PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com under the tab called Contribute. Also there is the snail mail address, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, Beckley, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia. That's Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, not Berkeley, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, 25801. And contributions are badly needed because, just because we're gone a lot of this month doesn't mean that we don't get bills. And we're going to get billed one way or the other. So just a little bit of a reminder and an exhortation. David in South Carolina reminding us, Sarah Palin thinks Roe versus Wade were George Washington's two choices for how to get across the Delaware River. Jan in Vegas noting, this is group therapy to handle the idiocy out there these days. I hope it is. It certainly helps me. Darlene noting, Palin goes back to her roots every time. Don't say roots. She pays a lot to have those covered up. No, Palin goes back to her roots every time. She responds like she's in a beauty pageant. She's responding to that final question to either win or lose the pageant. And the response is typically bullshit, nonsensical, pulling it out of her ass every time. Jeez, those damned gotcha questions. At least in the beauty pageant, she knew it was coming. You know, that's what the gotcha questions about Paul Revere. Really? Gotcha questions about Paul Revere? You're kidding, right? How can there be a gotcha question about Paul Revere? Can you think of a gotcha question? Was he British or colonial? Oh, those gotcha questions. What color was Paul Revere's brown horse? Oh, gotcha questions. I hate it when Agnes hides the bottles. And from David in Tennessee, Palin's definition of a gotcha question, anyone that hasn't submitted in advance, researched by aides, and the scripted answer boiled down to a write-it-on-your-hand answer for the Palin. Release the Palin. So, I guess we have the beginning of the program, don't we? You're welcome to chime in if you'd like. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes in to Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. And we'll be right back. Oh, I hate songs with fade-up intros. There it is. All right, light them up.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. 10. Ground control 9, to Major Tom.
8, 7.
This is ground control to Major Tom. You've reached
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't worry about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
We will begin conversation radio as it should be, with conversation. How's that sound? Good. Glad you like it. So getting I got to produce all this at the same time. Okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, just a second, please.
Okay.
Hey, can you hear me?
I got you fine.
Lima Charlie, this is Mark calling you from Florida, 5x5.
All right, cool, Mark. How's it going, brother?
Going great. Just a little G.I. Joe stuff there for the right-wingers that are eavesdropping.
Yeah, they get off on that stuff, don't they?
Apparently, they like all the uniforms. They like all the look and the part. They just not real big on the participating, apparently.
Right, they like it when somebody else looks the part.
Well, they want our children marching to schools, and if you notice, all your ROTC programs, when you and I went to school, were in universities. Now they're in our high schools. I guess they're going to junior highs next with ROTC.
Little cap guns and yeah.
They're such good Christians. They're gonna have our children marching and then refer to somebody else as fascistic, I suppose. I really don't know.
Well, you know, that Paul Revere, he was going to make sure to tell those British that they're not going to take our arms.
Yeah, that's one is by land, two is by sea. But in the meantime, I'm going to run screaming down the street that the enemy's coming. I think that's giving away your position. A lot of folks would use encrypted devices now, but I think that was the idea behind the – even though that may have not worked out his – historically speaking, if that's correct, we were warning the British. Now that's a whole new concept. But then, according to Keith Olbermann, she named her son Bristol, thinking she had a full-time job with ESPN. And then, of course, I thought Bristol, I didn't know, but their ESPN's headquarters is in Bristol, Connecticut.
Connecticut, right.
She kind of jumped the gun.
See, I always thought she named Bristol after the Harvey's Bristol cream that she got loaded on the night he or she was conceived. And then, what is it? There's Piper and Willow. Well, they were named after characters on that show about the hippie yuppie witch or yuppie witches on TNT or whatever.
Piper and Willow. I thought those were maybe small aircraft flying to warn the Alaskans the Russians were coming. I don't know. You know, did you figure out what Arnold Schwarzenegger and Rush Limbaugh have in common, Bob?
No.
Well, they both got Guatemalan housekeepers. I'm sorry, that's not nice. That wasn't very nice, very sensitive.
No, but there's an element of, yeah.
Well, you know, they're kind of rough like that themselves. I'm not a fan. I've never seen a Schwarzenegger movie and still refuse to watch a Reagan movie. And I say I wouldn't watch Reagan if I were in jail, and I've been in jail. You know, Bob, I actually called tonight. As you know me, I'm a strong union person, and I caught the other morning on Good Morning Joe, not named after Joe Scarborough, even though he thinks that it is, named after a morning cup of Joe, that I saw the footage and I understood what you're trying to tell us through words, a very difficult task, and also the scale and how quickly this has happened, and that it's happened very recently, this complete and utter destruction. And I just want to say, you made a comment tonight that it's what I am in my life too, Bob. I can't take another step forward by knowing the truth and neglecting the truth and looking at myself. And that's my struggle is a similar and actually the exact same struggle. And I do want the right wingers to know that the environmentalists and labor people, the true progressive labor people and environmentalists, so we are one. And what Bob Kincaid said last week about the United Mine Workers, you know, I believe their numbers were probably 10 times larger than what they are today. And as a fellow union brother or union brother to a union sister, what I could say, if Bob doesn't mind, is that if they were truly aggressive in organizing, they'd quit trying to organize the jobs that are going to be going away and start organizing the jobs that are coming. And those would be your green jobs. And it would take carpenters and laborers to build the footers and foundations for the wind turbines to be put in. And the wind turbines will be erected by union iron workers. And the union millwrights will set the fan blades. And union electricians will hook up the electricity. And there will be union linemen that will run the heavier coax cable below the fans, from what I understand. And to draw the power away, I know those aren't coal miner jobs, but somehow the United Mine Workers could organize those jobs and get United Mine Worker contracts there. So, and it's just one aspect. And one thing that Kennedy did say on Good Morning Joe, Bob, was talking about a large gigawatt project in California. I actually have friends that are going to that job or already on that job right now, union carpenters that I've worked with at San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station. And they won't be in the nuke business for the next 2 or 3 years. They'll be in the solar business for a while, and they're great jobs. The guys are actually complaining about the location of it because it's really out in the middle of nowhere, but that's where it has to be. But I wanted to let you know, Bob, I know where your heart is, and there was no question in my mind. And it was so profound, just those few snippets of what the magnitude of what you're talking about and how it really affects the whole United States.
Well, it really does, Mark, and thank you very kindly. I appreciate that, because the more that we help people to understand that this is not a regional or even a local issue, that this touches everyone, the sooner we get that across, the sooner we end it. And you know, one of the reasons we're going to D.C. tomorrow is because out of the entire federal government, only one little lonely administrative agency, the EPA, has shown any interest whatsoever in stopping the killing,
Because that's what it has to be understood. This isn't an environmental debate anymore. This is truly existential. This is a question between whether people live or die horrible, horrible, horrible premature deaths.
This is way more dangerous, Bob, than terrorism could dream to be, and it's been dangerous. And our cancer rates have spiked in this country proportionately with the pollution that comes from coal primarily and automobile pollution, and that's never even discussed. You never hear that discussed on the corporate-controlled radio waves.
And for good reason. Because they don't want it out there. I mean, the reason that we pushed the premiere of Bill Haney's The Last Mountain so hard is because its performance in its first weekend would determine whether it was picked up by other movie theaters. Now, when you consider the ubiquity of television and of every other demand upon our media dollar and our entertainment dollar, the hope that people will go out to movie theaters to see this is a piece of profound optimism, frankly. But it's what we have. You know, if this audience was significantly larger, more people would know about it because of me talking about it. But even as it stands here, the fact that it is, you know, there you are where you are, and you're not in Appalachia, and there are people in the Great Northwest and California and New England who I dare say would not know about this except for the fact that we talk about it here and have begun to understand that this is an issue that touches everyone. That's the bottom line. Everybody's involved. It's inescapable. Sometime this year, we will once again hear that the South is experiencing drought conditions. Well, there's hardly a stream that runs through the South that doesn't at some point owe its existence to the rivulets that begin far up in the Appalachians. And when we bury those rivulets, the extended South doesn't get the water mark, you know? And so it's all over the place.
I lived in Woodstock, Georgia, Bob, and I worked construction all over Georgia and into the Carolinas, and a lot of, I worked on the job tying the highway from North Carolina from Southern Tennessee into Asheville, North Carolina. And a lot of the workers were coming out of an area called Flag Pond. They called it Frog Pond. They were greatest guys, greatest workers. And when I lived in Woodstock, I drove back and forth from Woodstock over to Rome, Georgia. And there's Lake Altoona, and then on the other side of Atlanta, there's the large lake. Not Lake Lucerne, but it's a large lake where a lot of people with money.
Lake Lanier?
Lake Lanier, Bob, you're right. I apologize. And those lakes, and where people live on Lake Lanier on houseboats, I consider doing that myself. But those lakes actually have, especially Altoona and Lanier. I mean, they've actually gone. They're just big mud holes for the most part, and it's very. And I'm sure that ties right in that all of the rocks blocking. The water that comes down. I'd also share with you, and it'd be no surprise to yourself, but I think it was 8 attorney generals, primarily from the Northeast, had a class action lawsuit to sue primarily Midwest power plants, and I think it incorporated
over acid rain. Yes,
that's correct. And then of course a lot of the coal that they get, even though a good portion of the coal that you're talking to may be going overseas, but A lot of the coal, I'm sure, comes from somewhere here domestically. And then, correct me if I'm wrong, are they importing coal to Bob, to the United States?
No, not so much that I'm aware of. Okay. For the most part, no. A lot of the East Coast is burning Appalachian coal, but one of the problems that attends it is that mountaintop removal coal has gotten more expensive than coal dug out of the earth traditionally, by traditional means. Secondary to that is the fact that because the emerging industrial markets in India and China are so hungry for coal, stuff that ordinarily would have been burned in power plants in the U.S. is now being sold off as metallurgical coal, hence the mountain that's being literally removed and shipped to India a ton at a time here in my own county, Mark. That's just, you know, that's steam coal. That's the kind of stuff we would ordinarily burn for electricity. But they're so hungry for it, they don't care. They'll burn it to make steel. Now, here's the fun part. That's going to make some really crappy steel because of the nature of the coal itself.
And that crappy steel is coming right back here.
Bingo.
Yeah. We are jeopardizing every aspect of our society with the greed. The used semi-trucks, American semi-trucks, end up going, a lot of them, to Mexico. And then they turn around and put a new fan belt on it and drive it right back to the United States. And actually the Teamsters had to go down there and draw attention to that. And George Bush with the agreement with Mexico. We care about what are the ladies struggle trying to say, that right of liberty and pursuit, even though it does look like an F to me too.
Yeah. That was just me funning around. It's the fact that she said that it's in the Constitution that drove me batty.
Right. And it's like the Kane guy in Atlanta misquoted the they get the Declaration of Independence. They're not really really sure, but
they treat it like religion, and consequently they get themselves caught up in an ecstasy, and they get sort of slain in the patriotic spirit, and claiming that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness is in the Constitution is sort of the American governmental equivalent of speaking in tongues.
They get emotional about it, and they're not very knowledgeable about it. I think that's kind of like their religion, like you're saying. They get emotional about the religion instead of staying in touch with what it's truly trying to say, which makes a person like myself not want to go to a church where any of those people would hang out. I mean, they're very scary. And then a lot of them are very end-timers. I just wanted to get that off my chest. They don't really know what to do tomorrow morning, so any way they can expedite the destruction of the earth by any means, starting with wars, and there's always... And then you get, everybody says the rumors of wars. I really don't give a damn, but it's our job. Bob, I wanted to ask you, when you go to your conference, if there's any way it's possible for other people that do internet stuff, like I listen to Malloy sometimes, or I'll listen to the lady in the morning from California, if it's possible for them to make mention of the horn, would that be a conflict of interest? Would they require?
Well, Mike has been amazing in his long support of and willingness to share word of our existence with the truth seekers. I don't know about Stephanie. I don't have any real relationship with her, but Mike has always been supremely helpful, and has our undying gratitude for his willingness to just let people know we're there.
Well, that's because he's like yourself, a real person with a real heart, and really care about the destruction of our country. And they're selling the highways, they're bringing in Chinese steel, buildings will fail, highways are being sold, public education is being merged and closed and sold to private companies. They want to put our children in uniforms and march them to schools. You never see the ROTC programs, Bob, in a rich Catholic school. They want to send women to war. If women want to go, that's their prerogative, but they don't send rich white males to war. If they can't see this is all about people, they want to do away with Social Security. I make the argument with folks, if Social Security is not real, then why do the Republicans want to keep stealing it? The money's still there. It's fine. It only needs a minor adjustment, and it'll carry it out for another 30 years on the people that make $250,000 or more. I just close with this, Bob, and listen to your rest of your show. I get out of a radio signal, so I'm catching you before I head over to this power plant I work at. For the people, for the Christian right that are listening, a great website they can go look at themselves for would be RepublicanSexOffenders.com. It's a great site, and there's a lot of names being added to it by the day, and that's all I got, Bob. I appreciate the work you do, and I'll keep listening to you, and I will try to contribute. Our hours got reduced, so I'll do what I can when I can, Bob.
We understand. I absolutely do. Just thank you very much, Mark, for your ideas and frankly, the time that you share with us. Thank you very, very much, and have a good and safe shift.
Bob, and more importantly, you're going to be traveling roads. You're making a dedication in your life. You have a family that loves you. You have a wonderful sounding wife. You must have a wonderful son. You're a great dad. And please travel safely on these highways. You'll be going places you're not familiar with. Please be careful and know that we need you. We truly need you, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very kindly. We will. We will. Anytime I've got the kids in the car, I know I have precious cargo. So I will. I'll be as careful as I can. Thank you very much.
And be careful with Bob. We need Bob Kincaid.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Bye now. Mark calling from Florida. Email coming in from based on what Mark was saying about ROTC in the high schools. David in Tennessee just wrote in and said, I say yet again, Ferg is going to look so damn good in desert camo. That hint of green in that uni will pick up and amplify the reds in his buzz cut right out of high school and all those glorious benefits. And David says, okay, I'll stop being shitty. Damn, ROTC in high school. Shit, oh dear. Just like Nambla used to say, start him by 8, or it's too late. Well, who knew that the military was basing its recruiting program on Nambla? But it sure does make a lot of sense, doesn't it? But you think it all sounds like a joke? It's not. What Mark says is true. The highfalutin schools don't have ROTC programs in them. There was no ROTC program in my high school because I went to a high school that was in a you're a proud son of the same school, Matt. It was a nice little community. We didn't have a need for a ROTC program, did we?
No, we didn't.
We had marching bands and drama clubs and thespian societies and high school chapters of the American Chemical Society and, the High Y and Tri High Y and Boys State and Key Club. No ROTC. Well, guess what? We've damn sure got an ROTC program up here in the high school where my children go. And they get these little boys, they're mostly little boys, and I mean little boys, and they give them their little pickle suits, and they strut around and act like something. And they offer it as a course for credit, ROTC, as opposed to, say, offering, physics? Latin? Journalism? Debate? Yeah, you get the idea. But here's where it gets really fun. Ferg, his mother, and I have already gone round and round and round and round. 'Cause that boy of mine wants to take ROTC. This coming year, he decided to forego ROTC and instead is taking a class called Parenting. Parenting. No, not physics, not Latin, not journalism, not forensic debate, not calculus. Parenting. Because one of the greatest challenges teenagers in West Virginia face is how to deal with having a baby. Because we can't be teaching them about none of that contraception, because if them little wigglers don't get up there to that little egg, that means a silent abortion has taken place. Right? So, David, you didn't know the prophetic quality of what you were writing. Jan writing in, thanks, Mark, for voicing it for us all. Thank you, Jan. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, what's up, Jim?
You?
Trying to be.
My God, why did you have to read that letter from that? What's her name, Diane Kanish?
No. You're awful. You know that? Diane Kish of Sharples.
Of Sharples?
Yes.
Oh, dear. Well, as I wrote to you in your email, I just wonder what her sex life is like.
I don't even want to think. I mean, obviously she's a good Christian, so, she probably, only with the lights out, because you don't want Jesus watching.
No cowgirl, no reverse cowgirl, and certainly just a missionary position.
No Venus butterfly.
And no oral, because that's just plain sinful.
It's all dirty, Jim, even with the lights out.
And Sarah Palin, you know, she fascinates me, Bob.
Yeah, like a train wreck's fascinating.
Well, I mean, I wonder if she realizes that the drool on her pillow is just not hers.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, just take it for what it...
I understand. Yeah, okay. we needn't delve any further. But really, what is a Paul Revere gotcha question?
Listen, excuse my French, but the woman's just a fucking idiot.
She is that.
And then tries to defend what she says. I mean, I even tuned into Mike Wallace or Chris Wallace on Fox News Sunday morning, and she even embarrassed him.
Yeah, you mean when she tried to... No, I did not misspeak. He was warning those British that he was not going to... They were not going to take our arms.
Oh, God, I'll tell you. It's incredible. It's just incredible.
That's well, I won't watch that Sunday stuff, especially on Fox, unless I've got the makings for Bloody Mary's already out early in the morning.
Well, I had heard that she was going to be a guest on this program, and I just wondered what she was going to say. And I knew that would be one of the topics that would be raised.
Well, did you see her when she did that gosh, oh, golly, gee, little Shirley Temple fist swing thing there, Jim?
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. It's like Jan, Darlene said. She's still using the old hand gestures she learned on the pageant circuit.
Well, she may as well go ahead and just give everybody the finger.
No, she's waiting until she's made a few million dollars pretending to run for president, and then she says she can't do it because she's got to spend more time with Todd and little Keyshawn, Trip Keyshawn Flapjack Johnson or whatever.
Well, she'd probably say that symbol was just represented one of the lights that were hanging in the old North Church. Who knows?
Right. Well, you know, they call it the bird, and of course the national bird is the eagle. I call it the freedom bird, and that's just how patriotic I am.
Well, I've got a bird her, and it's right at the end of my hand.
Hear, hear, Jim. I think you expressed the sentiment for a great number of us.
And this thing about Representative Wiener, what in the world?
I know. But by the same token, I'll take the Clinton stance on this. It appears to have been between consenting adults, so what business is it of mine or anyone else's? Although I gotta tell you, if I caught my kid doing that, I'd bust him down to private in a minute. No more horn intern junior grade.
Well, I wish you'd sent me one. I mean, I'm curious now.
God, Jim.
Well?
You're incorrigible.
Well, I mean, I've heard all this stuff about it, and, you know, I just...
Well, what I find interesting is that he's apparently owned up and said, yeah, that's his photo, and that's got to make Jon Stewart feel real silly, because he went on air and said, you know, we hung out in college and stuff, and I got to tell you, that ain't him.
You know, a guy should have just said, yeah, I said it, I did it, that's it, let's go move on, instead of trying to get around it and say everything but that, yeah, it happened, I hit the wrong key, it was a joke, sorry.
But you know what pisses me off more than anything else about all of this, Jim, is that, and it's probably already happened, I don't have my Twitter feed up, so I can't quite tell, but it's probably already happened that now... This is the same as Senator Ensign breaking up a marriage and trying to destroy a family. It's the same as Larry Craig trying to pick up a quick one in a bathroom in Minnesota. It's the same as Newt Gingrich being married how many times? It's the same as all the stuff that Republicans do that really is nasty. Really is inappropriate, really is predatory, Jim. If anything, this is
Well, I don't know. Maybe he and Brett Favre can have have a couple of beers and sort some stuff out.
Well, you never can tell. He might be on that show they have on MSNBC where that guy tries to catch all these internet predators.
Right.
Who are, you know...
No, the saddest thing out of this is that it's going to be used as a means by which Andrew Breitbart somehow finds legitimacy. See, I really did break a real story. I didn't have to, even though he dummied up websites and everything.
Yeah, I would dare say that this is probably going to be this man's undoing.
You know, somehow I don't think so, because his electorate, his constituency, is pretty doggone liberal in the first place. I'll stand corrected by anyone who cares to do so who, you know, from that area. But I think he's going to be okay.
Well, his constituency is based in, like, near Flushing Meadows, where they held the 1939 World Fair in Queens. And I don't know what his stats were when he got elected and how closely it was. But I understand, now maybe I'm wrong, that it ranges from moderate to fairly conservative. I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, that's what I was hearing this morning on IMUS.
Oh, among other things, the saddest thing is that we've got a guy who was a pretty good liberal.
Yeah, I like the guy.
And by his own silliness, he's taken away a lot of his force and effect, because forevermore how long did it take Barney Frank to live down that one issue?
Oh, a long time. What was he doing? But now, according to what I heard, I don't know if this is true, this is purely hearsay, that he was running some kind of boy toy ring.
Well, or had hired one or something. I don't even remember anymore.
Yeah, I think that's basically what they were trying to make it out to be. But that he was involved with some type of, male visitation or male court service or something like that. I don't remember either, to tell you the truth.
And it's just, it's another loss that our side couldn't stand, even if the guy doesn't lose his reelection bid.
Well, I hope he doesn't, but you know, he really didn't try to just dance around it.
Well, and again, I say, Jim, it's none of my business, and I don't care. It doesn't appear to have violated any laws. It doesn't appear to have been anything other than a consensual act. It wasn't even sex.
Well, it wasn't frontal nudity, was it?
No.
Well, good Lord. I mean, it was just basically the outline of that particular portion of his anatomy. Is that it?
Yeah, through a set of, like, boxer shorts or something.
You know, I just don't understand why people put themselves in positions that, because I'm fairly crazy, and you know that, and I'll be the first to admit it. And as you say, I am totally incorrigible. And, you know, I really don't care about shocking people or anything like that. I could care less. But for a nice congressman, knowing pretty well the sharks are in the water out there, I sure as hell would not take it out of...
But what you're addressing, Jim, is the very reason these sorts of things happen.
Well, I mean, this guy just took a header right into the water filled with these people. And now, you know, they're making all kinds of jokes and stuff like that.
But it's really thrilling while you're doing it. You know, there's a big endorphin rush.
What do you mean?
Well, when you've gotten to a certain place in your life, I mean, let me use an analogy. Michael Jordan was the very best basketball player in the history of the game.
Yeah.
And he was making more money than God.
Mm-hmm.
everything, it's like, you know, he was taken up unto the yea verily that high place and shown the world and its dominions. And it was all his. And there were no thrills left. It's like the story of Alexander weeping because there were no worlds left to conquer, as the ancients note. And when you get to that point, you start to push the envelope to try to find something to bring those thrills that you used to get just by doing what you're good at back into your life. Whether it's Michael Jordan was gambling playing golf, on whether he would $25,000 on whether he'd sink a 3-foot putt. $75,000. Again, Alexander wept because there were no worlds left to conquer, because it was the conquest that made it all fun. Rush Limbaugh making $50 million a year, and yet he's got to send his maid out into the street with a cigar box full of money so she can bring back a cigar box full of street pills so that he can get some sort of something or another going for him that makes him feel a little less like him.
You think it's some sort of daredevil reaction?
It's not so much daredevil as it is do something, anything, to make you stop feeling so damned ordinary. Because you get that rich and suddenly and you wake up one morning and you realize you're still in your own skin, Jim. You're still you. You're not a god. And while people may mob you and so forth, that's more of a pain in the ass than it is a comfort. And you gotta have something to lift you above it all. Whether it's Hemingway and bullfighting, or any of these other things that vaunted, exalted personalities do. You know, Jimmy Buffett started out with a little tiny schooner off of Key West, and bless his heart, he's got this huge following. And he just kept expanding upward and upward and upward until he's flying World War II era seaplanes. Some people do seaplanes. Other people send pictures of their Johnson in their underwear. Me, I opt for the planes.
Well, I don't think playing the part of Dirk Diggler is going to help him very much. And contrary to what Mae West used to say, a thrill a day does not keep the chill away. That's for sure.
Yeah, what is it? Times of no sex will, something about getting you through times of no love or whatever.
No, it's dope will get you through times of no morality a lot more easily than morality can get you through times of no dope.
Works for me, Jim. Works for me. Yes, exactly. And so people do these things because they feel like they're in a position where they can get away with it. Well, we live in a world where you can't get away with it anymore.
Not really, not anymore. And like I say, people are very unforgiving about that sort of thing. It doesn't bother me. I'm not a prude. Like I said, I just wish I'd have got he would send a copy to me so I could just laugh.
Well, you know what you ought to do is go on the internet. Print the picture off as a glossy on your printer and just get your Sharpie out and sign it to Jim with fondest memories, signed the Anthony.
Well, I would have just written back. I said, is that all? Is that all there is? Like Peggy Lee used to sing? Is that all you got?
You're a bad, bad man.
Let me get off here.
You know, I think we should probably not use phrases like get off during this conversation, but I understand your point. Take care, Jim.
Take care.
Bye now. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, my God. You know what? Women don't really like pictures of junk sent to them. You know, I know you dudes are pretty visual. That's cool, but I don't want to see some dude's dick. I don't understand the appeal, except for I know that men are quite visual, which is cool. That's what they need to get what they want to get. But me, I don't want to see that.
No.
I'm just sorry. I'm like, I don't understand what the deal is with, you know, men doing it. It just seems to be real common, and it's kind of like...
Well, now, Sandra, to be fair, this is an axe with two blades, because it ain't just the guys.
Well, no, I understand that, but it's just kind of like, you know, it just seems to be, I guess maybe it's just the internet, I guess. It's kind of, it's just really not that appealing. I don't know, I'm like, you, yikes. But anyway.
And it's not even so much the internet, though, as it is the rise of multimedia messaging.
Yeah.
Via cell phones. I mean, remember, Brett Favre. He pioneered this with his cell phone.
No, but wasn't his photos of it without it being covered? There was.
Oh yeah, pulled the waistband out and shot a picture of Big Jim and the Twins, and it was over.
Right. Okay. Well, in this picture, which I haven't bothered because I really don't understand this story.
I'm so happy for you.
No, I just think it's an outrage. It's an outrage, and it's disgusting that. This man is crying about it and admitting to it. I'm thinking, are you really doing that? You know, who gives a F except for these, you know, disgusting people in the Beltway? You know, once again...
And the Republicans for whom it is masturbation material.
Yeah, everything is crumbling around, and this is what they're occupied. So it just kind of makes me angry more than anything. I'm just like, oh, my God. Yeah.
Wait, if you want to get angry, I don't suppose you caught the audio of the press conference.
Well, I just saw a picture of him on Yahoo News, and I just quickly moved on, and no.
Well, if
then
you...
I saw that Breitbart, and I thought, oh, my God.
Yeah, he ran down and held an impromptu press conference before Wieners.
Right, and so, and the point of him, what, I mean, so what is, you know, who cares about, he's trying to use this as a way of vindicating his whole stick, that guy?
Yeah, because he was finally going after somebody who wasn't a black person. But no, great moments.
Yeah, but it's a Jew.
Right, and see, he doesn't understand that.
Well, you know,
when he starts going after Newt Gingrich, we'll talk.
Yeah, but does he understand that these Republicans are so obsessed with, you know, Democrats' D's? That's what I think is hilarious.
But there was truly a great moment in for-profit media, Sandra, during the press conference.
Oh, what?
From somewhere in the back of the gaggle rose a voice screaming, "But was it fully erect?"
Now we're into the theater of the absurd. Really?
Really.
Oh, shit, I might have to check it out. Which one for Wiener, right?
When he was talking? Yeah.
Right. I mean, the thing about that story, it's just so unfortunate across the board. How is it that dude with a name like that is going to do that? First of all, that's my first question.
Well, you know, no, if, well, we, okay, Sandra, let's have this conversation real quick. His own holy book has a verse in it. And that verse says, "Pride goeth before a fall." Okay. Then there's this, and for this we have to run over to the ancient Greeks for a minute and their concept of hubris. Anthony Weiner did a comedy stand-up kind of thing that everybody got a big chuckle out of a little bit back, where he said, where he was giving grief to John Boehner. And he says, John.
Back to these unfortunate words, but yeah.
Yeah. He says, John, what is this Boehner? Come on, look at me. What am I, Anthony Weiner? Embrace it, brother. And the universe heard it, Sandra, and handed it back to him. So pride goeth before a fall, coupled with a little bit of good old-fashioned Sophoclean hubris.
Wow.
You know, you can't not take... I feel icky about the whole story.
Well, no, it's hideous, but it's more kind of, you know, it definitely speaks to operates. I mean, do you really think you're just having this private kind of laugh exchange with some woman across the country? Come on now. You know what I'm saying? This sort of false sense of security about what the hell the internet is. These are just things happening all the time with these fools. Remember that dude in New York?
Yeah.
Craigslist? I mean, what do they think is going to go on? It's just going to come out. And this wiener, this poor bastard, extended it by not copping to it. Oh, God, the language. You can't really avoid it. Sorry.
Well, right. And, David in South Carolina says that the talking point that's running out of the right-wing filth sewer megaphone now is Republicans are saying, well, it's about the lying.
Oh, please. Yeah, but so what? I mean, this man, please tell me this man is not going to step down. This is a joke, right?
He says he's not going to, but I think you could go and lay pretty close to even odds that he will.
Remember
when, and I know it's totally separate, seems like, but remember when Dick Durbin stood up on the floor of the Senate and said, speaking of Abu Ghraib and the torture stuff, that if you didn't know that this was the United States military doing this, you would swear it was the Soviets or the Third Reich.
Right.
And the right-wing message machine went into absolute sweat condition alpha hard overdrive, screaming, did you hear that? Dick Durbin has called our beloved military Nazis and Soviets.
Well, my next question is, does he have a bad relationship with Ms. Pelosi? Because she's demanding an ethics investigation already.
You know, I think Nancy would throw her mother to the sharks. If it meant she'd get back to being speaker again, it's just politics.
Okay, that's what I mean. I just wonder because I was like, "Damn, it's been 2 minutes and that bitch is already that woman is already calling for something extra on it." And it's like we don't need to put a 10 on it; it's already been done. Damn.
Well, and you beat the right wing to the punch, and you try to neutralize it by getting out there with the call for it first. See, we're ethical. We investigate our own.
Right, well, that's what exactly, although another sort of unfortunate type of situation, but yes, they eat their own. Listen, if everything wasn't so fucked up everywhere else, this would be a hilarious story, because I did see a picture of that Breitbart. He just looked hysterical. I'm like, ew, I had to quickly slick away from that too because.
Oh yeah, Andrew Breitbart looks like the kind of guy you don't let children around.
Yeah, he's horrible looking, isn't he? But anyway, I don't know. I guess I was more kind of like just taken aback because, the sort of body parts all over the show. It's just like, oh no.
But there's a legitimate question, Sandra, and that is this. Every time the for-profit media gets wrapped up in one of these things, something else slides under the radar.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And the thing that slid under the radar for me was like, hello, a full meltdown in 3 reactors?
Yeah, I noticed that.
That's on, in front. That was on CNN, and I'm like, Anyway, what broke for you?
I just got it via Brad blog, the headline, Radiation at Fukushima, number one, highest since crisis began. Steam rising through reactor floor.
Yeah, but they're saying that the other two fully melted down, too. And the thing about it is it's like sort of yawn. And I'm thinking, are you kidding me? And let's just say they're still going to stick with their schedule. But we know this information that TEPCO is just straight out, flat out lying, and it's a big cover up. Then,
and I've seen stories in the last week or so about senior citizens volunteering to go in because their lives are, they've lived their lives, and young people ought not to have to,
I'm so disturbed by that story. I'm sorry. I'm just like, oh my God. Anyway.
But again, don't look for any major reporting on this from the for-profit media because they're obsessed with.
No, it's true, and it's really it's outrageous. Anyway, listen. For some reason, this phone's deciding to die.
They do that sometimes. Sandra, hang in there. I share your frustration, and it's yeah, I don't want to see it neither. And I don't understand the prurient. Well, like I said with Jim, it's masturbation material for the right wing, and I mean that literally. They're that sick. Sandra, take care. I think I lost her beforehand, but you get the idea. Was it fully erect? By God, that's some journalism. Hey, welcome to the program.
You see, here's the whole thing about it.
Hey, David.
The thing about it is that Breitbart, and people are not paying attention to this, is that Breitbart obviously has a cachet of photos. Now, you add that into the equation, that's why Wiener ran out, because he said he was going to release them.
In other words, he blackmailed a member of Congress.
Well, in the press conference, he actually said this, Bob. It goes, now, I did get a photo of a full frontal nude Congressman Wiener, but I'm not going to show that because I know that his family would go through such anguish to see that. He goes, so I'm not going to do that.
Yeah, because there's no anguish involved with this.
No, there's no anguish at all. But see, the thing about it is
but wait, David. Okay, shallowness moment.
Yeah.
But there's an old trick out there. I may have mentioned it before.
Yeah.
Where, like, if you've got a crime scene in court and it's just a terribly, horribly bloody mess, and say the prosecution brings in the 8x10 color glossy with circles and arrows and paragraph on the back of each one.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this just god-awful bloody mess. Well, the defense counsel gets up and says, well, that's going to inflame the jury. We can't show that. And your smart prosecutor will look up and go, well, what if we only showed it in black and white, Your Honor? Would that be okay? Well, okay, as long as you can't see all that red blood laying around. And so so they bring forward the black and white glossy version. And what the poor little defense counsel didn't even understand is that's going to be 10 times worse for his client, because you can't tell quite exactly what's blood and what's the spilled Pepsi. It all looks like blood. It's the shower scene from Psycho. Okay, so when Breitbart comes out and says, well, I do have a full frontal nude, but I won't release that because there would be too much trauma to the family.
Yeah.
What's he just done, David?
Yeah, he's actually just put it out there again that he'll probably release it.
Or, well, what he's also done is put it in people's heads that no matter what comes out, there's something worse.
But here's the other thing to it that people are not really paying attention to, is the fact that if you look at what Daily Kos, and I will say the website, and a lot of other websites that they jumped on, the thing that they didn't understand was the fact of how it looked that he was lying about something, and then if you looked at the players involved of who around it, I think what happened is they didn't actually do a hack. They probably thought about it, but they couldn't crack his password. So they set up a deliberate smokescreen to get the left all worked up like it always does. You know how many people tweet Breitbart every single day? That's what he feeds off people. That's what he wants you to do. He wants you to mention his name. He doesn't care about the people who likes him. He cares about the people that hate him. That's it right there. That's the game plan.
It's the old Howard Stern line. People who love Howard Stern listen for 2 hours a day. People who hate Howard Stern listen for three.
Right. So this is what I don't understand. And you know, you have and you know this from progressives. They will actually tweet Breitbart, and they'll tweet them again, and they'll tweet them again, and he'll RT it, and he'll do it over and over again. Don't you understand the game? He wants you to keep tweeting him because he shows that hate to all the people that are riding for him, his promoters, his sponsors, his carnival barkers, and they get excited about it because they don't care about the positivity people. They care about the hate, and that's why
they care about the exposure. There is no such thing as bad publicity.
That's right. That's right. But
so how long does it take before somebody gets serious and goes out there and finds Breitbart with a live boy or a dead girl?
Or
a poodle.
Well, you see, the thing is all of these bloggers, they got excited. The fact that they couldn't see that this was a trap from a mile away, is really, really an evidence of why we need, why I go back to progressive boot camp. Even Bob Seska fell for this shit. Even Bob Seska. And, you know, then, Wiener, to add it all, why Breitbart won on the whole thing, and I hope everybody's listening, all of you bloggers and all of you writers, listen, this is why he won. He got the congressman to apologize. Game over, you lose.
Bingo.
And that's really what it's all about. So whenever, look, whenever someone tries to tell you, oh, but I got Breitbart this time, because I hear so many progressive writers say that, you don't get shit. He's Lee Atwater of the digital age, and he wants you to respond.
Ooh, I think you just scored. He's the Lee Atwater of the digital age.
That's right. He's the Lee Atwater of the digital age, and he's going to continue to do what he does. So for anyone who thinks it's cute to respond to Breitbart on Twitter, you're just giving him more. You're just giving him more ammo of where he wants to be.
Don't feed the trolls.
Don't feed the trolls. And did you see how he trended today? He knows what he's doing. He absolutely knows what he's doing. But here's the better question, progressives: Do you know what you're doing? I don't think you do.
I think you may.
They gave it to him all, Bob. They gave it to him all once again, and he's laughing. And you have to understand this. You have to understand this. That is, when you have a playing field that's rigged, you're not going to win. So the best thing to do is ignore him. Sorry, that's how it is. Block him on Twitter. Do whatever you got to do. But don't write blogs about him. Don't make hashtags. Don't make any of this shit. Shut it down.
You make a compelling argument for it, David.
Well, let me say this. The fact is that because of this, he's going to get another book deal. You watch. He's going to get more media appearances.
No. This is his ultimate grab for media legitimacy. Because up until now, he has done complete phony baloney, no truth in it, BS. Now he's within reach of being the man who took down a liberal. Okay? And at that point, he will be declared by the right wing to be the second coming of Jack Anderson. If you recall who Jack Anderson was.
You're going to have to refresh me on this.
He was like number one or two on Nixon's enemies list. He had a column in the Washington Post.
Mm-hmm.
And, real muckraker. You know, really brought it, shown the light on governmental slime and sleaze and abuse and fraud and corruption and that kind of stuff. Did real investigative journalism. He was an investigative journalist, kind of the way Cy Hirsch is an investigative journalist. And what is sickening out of this is that the right wing will now say, well, see, we've got an investigative journalist just like Cy Hirsch and Jack Anderson. Them liberals think they got that Greg Palast, but by God, look here. We took down a dirty-ass, sex-fiend congressman liberal, and they're all like that.
They love the theater of it, and that is the reason why he will continue to get job after job, and the fact he made Congressman Wiener apologize. Always remember that. The fact that
No, it's not the apology, David. They're not done. He will not quit until Congressman Wiener has quit.
Oh, Bob, I agree with you. I'm saying that this is his calling card to other bigger and brighter jobs on the pasture of the Beltway, including taking down the president.
Well, we've got Matt Osborne here in the studio tonight, and what Matt just said to me is Breitbart is like a serial killer who's graduating upward.
But again, my point.
And eventually he's going to, it puts the lotion on its skin. Eventually he's going to have him a liberal suit to wear.
But see, my main point is that the hashtags, everything that brought him out in the focus, you made him into a bigger threat than what he was. And that's what his plan was all along, because he worked on the left side. He knows how the game is played. And he knows when the field is rigged. Well, by God, it's his oyster. He can do whatever he wants.
Ain't it grand?
And that's the thing. But the other thing I wanted to mention was I just saw an interview with Seymour Hersh on Democracy Now talking about he was talking about Iraq and how it was coming unglued, and I found that really interesting because right after he said that, then you had the five soldiers killed in Iraq. And it's something because patriotic people, I didn't hear any news about the soldiers being killed in Iraq from the patriotic conservative side.
No, it's like what Mark said earlier in the program. They like all the trappings of looking the part, but it's really they don't want in the fight.
And you know, the thing is that I'm sorry, but we can't be cruise missile liberals anymore. We can't get on this war on the terror bullcrap. We need to get off this train. I'm going to say it again. We need to get off this war train. And if you are a war hawk and you believe in the military and all of this, just remember this. Before I go, just remember this. Every time there is a bullet and they manufacture ammo, it's going to go to a foreign land and there's going to be a war. And they're going to find an excuse for it. So don't just sit there and pretend, if you are a liberal or a Democrat, don't sit there and pretend that this is a justified war anywhere. It's all just a joke.
Well, especially as long as we're engaging in war for the sake of ExxonMobil. Or Unocal's pipeline from the Caspian Sea Basin to the Indian Ocean.
And getting us worked up over insignificant attacks in our lives. I mean, let's be honest. There are many more things that we can...
But I got to tell you, I love this story that came out today, speaking of bullets and so forth.
Right.
You know, because we hadn't had a real good Al-Qaeda sighting in a while. Well, you know, we killed the guy who was under consideration to be Osama bin Laden's replacement, said by many to be... And we hellfire missiled him the other day. From a Predator drone, supposedly. But there's an Al-Qaeda spokesman named Adam Yahya Gadan, okay? And they refer to him as Jihad Joe, har, 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 har. But he put one out there, whispered into the ear of the universe, that has got to just really, really resonate with the fine folks at the National Pig Lick and Rifle Association, David. He issued a statement. Let me see if this is actually in English.
Muslims in the West have to remember that they are perfectly placed to play an important and decisive part in the jihad against the Zionists and Crusaders, and to do major damage to the enemies of Islam, waging war on their religion, sacred places and things, and brethren. This is a golden opportunity, and a blessing from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and the way to show one's appreciation and thanks for this blessing is to rush to discharge one's duty to his ummah and fight on its behalf with everything at his disposal. And in the West, you've got a lot at your disposal. Let's take America as an example. America is absolutely awash with easily obtainable firearms. You can go down to a gun show at the local convention center and come away with a fully automatic assault rifle without a background check and most likely without having to show an identification card. So what are you waiting for?
You got that? Al-Qaeda has now told Muslims in the U.S. to go down to your local patriotic, God-fearing, right-wing, or pig-licking NRA rifle and gun show and buy you some guns and start shooting up America.
I did hear about that, and that's some good advice for the Al-Qaeda.
And, you know, I'm guessing that since they're pretty savvy, you know, those inscrutable Arabs,
mm-hmm.
they're not going to show up wearing the traditional tribal garb. They're going to show up wearing, I don't know, an NRA Eddie Eagle T-shirt and a pair of jeans and maybe some flip-flops or something and maybe sounding just like us. Because, you know, just like us... I walked into a gun show. I considered myself fortunate. Ferg and I were out a few months back, and I was kind of just sort of screwing around. Had something we were waiting on. I forget what. And so there was a gun show going on. We walked into the gun show. And shortly after we walked out of the gun show, several people got shot.
No kidding. But I walked around in there, and there was all kinds of upstanding, patriotic, God-fearing, gun-owning Second Amendment rifle. They ain't going to take away our arms when guns is outlawed. Only outlaws will have guns, Americans. And about a third of them had beards on them that would put an Al-Qaeda member to freaking shame. These dudes don't even have to shave. And you know what?
Send them to Gitmo.
Yeah, I mean, you know, just put the money on the table and walk away with the gun, because that's what freedom means in America.
That's
beautiful, you know, ain't it?
It is wonderful. And as we see everything happening right now that is coming unglued, I just can't help but think about what I said last time. It's time to start a progressive boot camp, and we are definitely living in Gabos, people. Gaming based on sympathy.
Well, Cindy out in the Great Northwest wrote in, and she said, tell David not all is lost. Many of us have not seen the tweet. We have not read the story. We have never looked for Breitbart on the net. We need more people like us, ones who won't look at a story like this at all.
I wish it was that easy. I really do. But it's the masses that dictate where we're going to go in terms of politics and news cycles. And unfortunately, you see what happens. It's going to be sex all the time. And it makes you think, the fact that we are in a real-time media digital world now, that's a contradiction of terms. But the fact that we are in that right now, how are we ever going to have a real story on the table that's actually going to get legs now?
Well, I think what you're trending toward, to use the language of the argot, or use the argot of the, what you're trending toward there, David, is the fact that we are never going to have serious stories on the for-profit media table, because the for-profit media gave up on the idea of serious journalism a hell of a long time ago. The for-profit media gave up on serious journalism during the Clinton-Lewinsky scandal. It's just that there aren't a hell of a lot of us out here who actually noticed it.
It makes you wonder what would happen. This is just an experiment. What would happen if you were able to get all of the trending topics on the internet, and you instantly wave a magic wand and you typed in The Last Mountain? What kind of response would you get after a week? Would people be extremely motivated and energized? Or would they move to back to the Wienergate territory?
You know, I think they have a natural affinity for Wienergate, because these stories are easy, David.
Yeah.
Because you pick one side or the other, and here's the bonus, you don't even have to intellectualize it. You can just have a purely emotional, visceral response to this crap, and you're in like Flynn.
Look, a penis.
Yeah, there. Look, a penis.
That's pretty much it.
I mean, for years and years and years, the Art Instruction Schools of America featured they got their word out by virtue of matchbooks, and they had a picture of a pirate, and they had a picture of a parrot that was called Spunky. And what you were supposed to do is you were supposed to reproduce the pirate, draw the pirate, or draw Spunky from the matchbook on a piece of paper and mail it away to the Art Instruction Schools of America, and your drawing would be analyzed by professional artists to determine whether or not you had enough talent to pay for their correspondence school course.
I saw that ad, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Well, what we have now is the Draw a Penis School of For-Profit Media Journalism. If you can talk without a lot of blinking into a television camera and say penis without smirking, if you can stand at the back of a press conference and at the top of your lungs scream, "Was it fully erect?" then you too can be a highly paid member of the for-profit media. And you need never worry, and as long as you can generate that crap, you need never worry about having the difficulties of a learning curve where you have to actually learn about an issue or
icky things like, I mean, icky. Yeah, the truly icky things to the for-profit media are nuance and depth and expertise. No, you just stand at the room, back of the room. Was it fully erect? And you're made. You are a made journalist. Hey, look, it's the fully erect guy over there. Man, that took some real for-profit media skill, brother.
Well, that brings us back to the question. How do you counter this to the masses? I don't think anyone really has an answer.
Well, the conventional wisdom is that you try to let it run its course.
Mm.
It's just like the clap. You know, you apply a little medicine to it, and you let it run its course.
Right.
I don't know that that works, David.
Yeah, I don't know if that works either. You have too much comedy potential in this, not to...
Well, I'm not even so bothered by the comedy potential as I am for the potential for Wolf Blitzer to appear on screen behind thunderous intro music that involves martial fifes and pounding drums and thum-dum-a-da-dum-dum-a-da-dum, the Wiener Penis Story, Day 3. Here now, award-winning journalist Wolf Blitzer. Greetings today. We come to you from inside Anthony Weiner's boxer shorts. We have exclusive photo. We have an exclusive interview with the penis. This is news you can use from America's number one political team, the best political team in blah, 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 blah. Fire! You know.
You know, the thing about Wolf Blitzer, which was, it looked like The Daily Show when he showed that Xerox photo of Wiener's crotch to the congressman. Yeah, it's like, are you serious? We do not need visuals like this. And the fact, here's the other thing. The fact that I have seen in the past news media, they do blurred photos, and the fact that our news media has gotten so bold, they don't blur the photos anymore. It's like, here's a crotch, here you go. This is the crotch of a congressman, see it? Lewd. This ain't lewd.
Saying this is important journalism. This is... Right.
Saying you're against coal is lewd, but this ain't lewd.
No. The for-profit media is one big dick joke. I mean, it really... And how long has it not been? You know, they... How many years did they root around trying to get hold of Bill Clinton's zipper?
Well, to be honest, though, Bob... The whole apparatus that they have is so cavernous and huge. This is what it takes to fund their operation. All of these crap stories. Because
yeah, and understand that I feel really nasty having spent as much time on this story as I have. But well, if nothing else, I hope what we're doing is pointing out what a load of crap it is. And no, I ain't putting no hashtags about no Breitbart out there.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying.
I know like three hashtags.
That's good. Keep to those three hashtags. Yeah, I think the lesson we learned this week is that the media will continue to divert our attention and accelerate stories and expand.
Because isn't it interesting, David, that lo and behold, there has begun to be talk about a double-dip recession. I was listening to NPR while driving around yesterday, maybe it was. Maybe it was Saturday, I'm not sure. But I heard NPR talking about, let's see, how do they put it? We might be entering a double-dip recession, but we really don't know because no economist has ever actually seen one. And so I'm kind of listening because, you know, it's interesting and I like to learn things, sometimes even from NPR. And I'm thinking, you know, wow. But one of the things I was proudest of, I said this on Thursday night's program. I said there's a certain amount of irony in the fact that the waveform of a double-dip recession looks like the letter W.
Yeah, I heard that.
Okay, so guess what? I'm listening to NPR, and I hear their analyst, the economist guy, say, well, you know, that's the thing. Nobody's ever seen a double-dip recession, but oddly enough, it looks like a W. Vindicated, hallelujah, glory. But beyond that, it, I mean, these are what happened. What does you know, And the question was put forward, well, you know, what would it take to keep us from going into a double-dip recession? And the guy says, well, really, the way you prevent that is you go to stimulus part two, for which nobody in the Congress has any stomach whatsoever.
Mm.
So, in other words, we've got a story out there that looks like the Congress of the United States is going to hang us being, you know, working, struggling, aching, breathing America. The Congress is going to hang us all out to dry rather than fixing the problem, because they're both too, because they want certain things going into the 2012 election cycle. So we may have a double dip recession, which is just going to be hell. They were talking about things that Sandra talks about all the time, things
right.
like the new norm of a world in which unemployment is just 8 or 9%. The guy made this very trenchant observation. He says, listen, Europe has 8 or 9% unemployment as a norm, but Europe has a very vibrant, robust social safety net so that it can deal with those sorts of things. He said, America doesn't have that, and it makes it 1,000 times uglier.
Well, you know what I think? Well, you know what I think is another sign is the fact that it was announced that George Soros got rid of most of his gold. I wonder if he sold it to Ron Paul.
Well, or Glenn Beck.
Or somebody. I mean, I hope he got
it. But I mean, what I'm getting at is that is all a very serious story, and the job numbers and all the rest of the economic numbers that came out on Friday were total caca. Okay, so what do we get for Monday? Detailed analysis of the soup we're in? Oh, hell no.
Penis!
You know?
Well, that's a dip of some sorts.
Stop it. No toaster for you tonight.
Well, Bob, the one thing I wanted to say was I hope this movie brings attention. The Last Mountain, I'll give a plug for it, by director Bill Haley. And I hope, you know what, somebody needs to go to IMDb and write a review for it, because you only have, I think, a 6.5 rating on it, and that's not good.
Oh, very good. Yeah, activist internet participation.
Yes,
I didn't realize
yeah.
that. I feel kind of funny writing a review of it because, you know, I'm so close to it, but I guess there's no harm in that.
But here's the other thing. If you want a topic... if you want to engage conversation, yet another plug for our people listening in Atlanta, Conversation Radio. If you want to engage in conversation, you can actually, there's a message board, you sign up for it and start a discussion there as well. Because here's the thing about it, Bob. That discussion board, every time they type that word, well, those words in The Last Mountain, it's going to come up, and people are going to see those comments, and they're going to check it all around the world. So it's like having like a universal forum at your fingertips.
Wow.
So you know, that's something that people want to consider. Whenever somebody makes a movie, or there's a book or a documentary or something, and you have a site like this that has a platform like that, you want to start
go and use it
discussion. Yes. And also, for the people who are listening who are mountaintop removal activists, you want to get in that discussion as well. So I would encourage everyone to go to IMDb and to start that discussion before you have the trolls get there.
Exactly. Well, thank you, David. That's a great idea.
Well, you know, Bob, I just think that it's about time when it concerns our documentaries that we support them, and we support them fully, and we get out there and we promote what we feel most passionate about, and it's just that simple.
Hear, hear. Thank you, David.
All right, Bob, later.
Take care. Bye now. Pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine, and that is a damn fine idea. Once you have seen The Last Mountain, go and review it at IMDb and get this thing catching fire. That really does help create the buzz. And just to let you know, thanks to the two of you who have, between you, contributed $35 tonight. It really does help every bit. No, there's no such thing as a little bit. It's all a product of sacrifice, and we know it. Every bit helps. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan.
I'm going to make my first and last comment about this whole subject, and then I'm going to change it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, my only comment is the best thing we can do, as far as I'm concerned, is quit talking about it.
There is that.
Now, I have a nominee for Moran.
Oh, good.
Yes. Actually, it's kind of a combined nominee. It is, first nominee is the Basin Clinic of Vernal, Utah. And the other half of the nomination goes to, the police department there.
Oh, this is not going to be a fun combination.
The reason being, there is a gentleman there, by the name of, Jason West. Now, he had a disputed copay with this Basin Clinic for $25. Admittedly, it's not much, but hey, every penny counts. You watch your P's and Q's. He went down there and couldn't get any joy, but he went down there prepared to pay. Oh, he said, take cash. They said, certainly. He then proceeded to pour the entire $25 on the counter in pennies.
Okay.
Now, I think that's a pretty cool idea. You pay it under protest, do it in pennies. It's legal tender. Here's where the moron part comes. They called the cops. And the cops busted him.
For paying in pennies.
Yeah, for, quote, disturbing the peace. But actually, it was for paying the bill in pennies. Said this particular offense has a fine of up to $140. Personally, if he can't get out of it, where's the ATO when you need them? I really want him to show up with pennies.
Again.
I'll contribute pennies. I'll send him a roll.
You know, you'll see little signs like that even at convenience stores around here, Susan. Pennies not accepted. And it always frustrates me because it really is. It's the coin of the realm.
Yeah, according to the law, they should have to accept it. Because if according to the blog posting I was reading, somebody who was rather obviously a lawyer because he was quoting statutes, federal statutes, apparently if they refuse to accept payment in pennies, since it is legal tender, that can nullify the debt.
You would, yes.
I don't want to pay attention to that, guys. $25 in pennies is still $25. Don't knock it.
But we'll have to spend all those man hours counting them, and then you lose count 1, 2, 1,500, 1,503. Oh, damn, I think I'm at 1. Because we've all seen the Warner Brothers cartoon where the little old granny lady steps up to the bank and says, and I forget, maybe it's Daffy Duck is in a hurry, or maybe it's Yosemite Sam, maybe it's Bugs Bunny, I can't recall. But somebody's in a hurry to get to the bank window, and the little old lady steps up to the window with this huge bank, I'd like to deposit $2,000. Well, yes, ma'am, in pennies. 1, 2, 3. I have a feeling we've got a Warner Brothers fan on our hands.
Oh, yeah. Hey, I imagine you. I can't live without my Daffy Duck or Marvin the Martian.
Well, Daffy is every man. Chuck Jones always said that Bugs was, you know, Bugs is kind of a hero. Bugs only messes with people who mess with him first. But he said nearest and dearest to his heart was always Daffy.
Daffy.
Because Daffy is just us.
Yeah, and completely flying off the handle.
Who among us would not dive into the mountain of gold coins and come up out of it saying,
I'm rich. I'm rich. I'm comfortably well off. I'm socially secure. Every time you spend a dollar on Powerball or Mega Millions or whatever the lottery is, every time you spend a dollar on it,
you're being daffy.
Basically, you are paying a dollar's homage to Daffy Duck.
Hey, that's a good reason to blow a buck as anything. But there was a whole list of other incidences where people had gotten kicked off and paid in pennies. And apparently, if they turn them down, well, then apparently the debt doesn't exist.
Right, because they've refused to accept payment on the debt, and therefore they have declared the debt null and void.
Exactly.
And I guess the opposite theory of that, though, is that when one pays in pennies, it is obvious that one is engaging in an act of harassment.
Okay. And, well, hey.
But until such time as it's no longer legal tender, sorry.
Yeah. And that's why God invented coin count machines.
Ah, yes, the Coinstar, bane of my existence. Into which a distant relative of mine poured a couple of bags of solid silver United States currency belonging to my father and received back the sum total of $326. Solid silver quarters, solid silver dimes, walking liberties. Oh, yeah. I cry every time I walk past a Coinstar.
But it really wasn't the machine's fault.
No, it's just a reminder of how nasty family can be.
Oh, yeah, tell me about it. Been there, done that, and bought the T-shirt. I got families that are, well.
Indeed. Well, Susan, good to hear from you, and thank you for putting up the schedule. I really do appreciate that. And I hope instead of thinking, well, I guess Bob's gone off the air for good this time, they'll just go and look at the schedule and realize that we're on the road working to save our homes.
And people, if there is any change, I'm sure Agnes will email me, and then I will get on.
Right, and like while we're at Netroots Nation, if we're going to be on the air during Netroots Nation, I will tweet it. I will Facebook it.
Yeah, but if you they can, I will also change it as needed, so keep checking the schedule.
Watch this space. Thanks, Susan. Have a wonderful night.
Love to Agnes.
All right. Bye now. You know, I remember when Ed Wiley solicited pennies. Pennies. And they came from all over the country. It was called Pennies of Promise. And he gathered pennies as much as he could and carried bags upon bags of them to Governor Joe Manchin and said, these pennies come from school children all around the world who want to see their fellow school children at the foot of that god-awful hellhole at Marsh Fork Elementary have a new school. Pennies have meaning. And beginning with Pennies of Promise, eventually that school was funded. State government had to be shamed into it. But it was funded through a generous contribution from the Annenberg Foundation, at which point even Massey Energy had to say, okay, we'll put in $2 million too, and those children will enter a new, safe school this fall, far away, far away from the horrors of an earthen sludge dam holding back 2.8 billion gallons of toxic waste, and far away from the coal prep plant that pumped poison into their bodies day in and day out. Pennies, you see, matter. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
It's Andy.
Hey, Andy, what's up?
It's the cover-up that'll get you, Bob.
It is.
That cover-up.
Just ask Nixon.
Yeah, that just ups the ante. They just keep chasing you more. And then when you have your own side getting the piling on penalty on you, that's kind of nice, too, with Ms. Pelosi. Just ratchet it up.
Well, don't you think that's like some sort of damage control where she's trying to get out there before John Boehner can flail it, flog it as, you see, we're upstanding, you know, that kind of thing, Andy?
Yeah, it worked with Charlie Rangel, right?
Kind of did, yeah.
Dragged him through the muck for a long time. Hey, my phone's probably going to go out because I've been, unfortunately, for me, I had to wait a long time, but fortunate for you, you got a lot of callers on the line.
Yeah, I think
my phone's probably going to give out here in a second.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's okay.
But, yeah, I think it's people getting in line just because, you know, we're not going to be here for so long.
Right. Well, it's certainly nice listening to the callers. Hey, something that Sandra brought up last week I thought was pretty cool. That in Germany, they're knocking off all the nuclear power plants.
Right. Seems prudent, doesn't it?
Just a wonderful thing by Angela Merkel. Got the message from the constituency. See, this is what happens when you have the Greens take over in a region, Baden-Württemberg, that's never happened before. It kind of scares the political elite and says, hey, even though nuclear now supplies 25% of all the electricity in Germany, we got to do something. Or we're not going to be in office, and I'm not going to have a cash flow coming in anymore.
And you got to remember as well, I think, that we're talking about the Germans here, who, left to their own devices when they don't have an urge to rule the world, the Germans are among the finest the can-do people on Earth. And they have, it was jokingly said, I think, by John Stewart, but it's the truth, they have a can-do attitude. You know, the knock on solar and wind is that, well, you know, it's hard to keep it in the grid. You know, it's hard to get it to the grid and have it there on demand all the time. But you know what? The Germans look at that and say, that is the problem, is it? Well, I think it is time we solve that problem. We'll get back to you next week.
Right. Get all those PhDs and engineers working on the problem.
And you know what? They'll solve it.
Right. I just heard that today, a matter of fact, and it made no sense to me. Oh, there's just no wind in the center of, like, a place like Georgia, it was mentioned. Oh, there's just no wind there. We just can't build the wind farm. Oh, there's not enough sun. It's just not bright enough there. Well, what is Germany? There's no, that isn't a similar situation where there's not enough sun, and they generate, like, 12, 14% of their electricity now with alternative sources.
Right, and well, the neat thing about this about wind and solar is there's this sort of odd little relationship between the two, and generally when the sun's not shining, the wind's blowing.
Right.
And when the wind's not blowing, the sun is shining. So one way or the other, you're going to have plenty of energy.
Well, like you said, you just store it. They'll find a means to store it. I don't think it's a big rocket science problem. That's what you got batteries for.
Right. And that's ultimately that's what it's about. It's about battery and storage technology advancing in that realm.
Right. Banking those batteries. Now, another thing I don't know if you saw, back on March 11th, Helen Caldicott did a nice piece in the New York Times. And you know how they always say that nobody's been killed by nuclear power? I keep hearing that. And in the article, she brings up that 25 years after Chernobyl, 1 million people have died because of that accident. What do they mean nobody's died from nuclear power? And it's a study by the New York Academy of Sciences that came out in 2009 that says there's been 1 million deaths from Chernobyl. So I wish the righties would stop saying that baloney. And the thing about nuclear power...
Well, good God, what do you say about the people who died in Soviet submarines, for Christ's sakes?
Right, or the people at Hiroshima and Nagasaki after the war. Leukemia takes 5 to 15 years for those nice little cancer cells to ripen. So it takes a little time. And if you won't get a hard cancer, as she says in the article, it takes 15 to 30 years. So it's coming. And what's going to happen to those poor Japanese people that have been exposed to it? It's coming. It's not here yet.
Well, the nice thing is they've got at least a 15-year window in which government can step in and make sure that nobody can pursue compensation for it. But then again, the Japanese do have at least a social safety net such that they might actually take care of the people who are harmed by it. On the other hand, something like that goes down here in America, the Senate will go and the House will go into overdrive. You remember when they went into overdrive to provide immunity to manufacturers of vaccines? So that even if the vaccine killed you, you could not sue the manufacturer?
You can't go after them, right?
Well, it would be the same thing here. Because you know what? All these lawsuits are killing America's ability to engage in business.
Right. Well, they got a great public health care system.
Yeah.
The Japanese, so. At least people are covered that way. You know, we always have this extra, like the whole health care melees to worry about that nobody's going to insure you if you have a pre-existing condition, period. And the bottom line, when you hear these moron Republicans just talk about this voucher program, it is so ridiculous because the bottom line is, and I've heard Sandra say this too, nobody's going to insure you if you're 75, 80 years old. And you have a pre-existing condition. Are you kidding me? I don't care what kind of voucher you got.
And God forbid you miss a payment. Or you not miss, but you're a day late on the payment. You get dropped and you will never be picked up again.
Right. Right. Now, something else I wanted to bring up, too. I don't know if you've seen the articles on they're going after this company called Arcadia Energy, which has a subsidiary here called Parnon Energy. They got caught cornering the market on oil futures contracts.
They just can't resist, can they?
This was in 2008. They drove the price up to like $148 for oil, if you remember when that happened.
Yep.
And these guys, according to the case they have against them, on the January oil futures contract, they had 2/3 of all the outstanding contracts cornered. In the March futures contract, I believe due in April or June, they had 84% of all the contracts cornered on that. So they drove up the price. So anybody that tells you that there's not manipulation of the markets is out of their mind.
They're lying, Andy. They're lying.
They caught these guys dead to rights. You got 85%.
But you know what drives me nuts? What drives me nuts is we've got a law to deal with that. We've got the Sherman Act out there, but we don't like to enforce it.
Well, that goes along with breaking up the big companies. You know,
yeah.
Question there, and that would help in the gas situation we have, breaking up the vertical distribution channel that the big five oil companies had would be kind of nice if they didn't have the whole industry from top to bottom, cornered as well. And you just don't build refineries. Just don't build refineries. You got no supply. Simple as that. You know, they couldn't give away land for the oil companies to build refineries. They didn't want to do it. You know, all these army bases when Clinton was in office, and they were going, I remember when I lived in Denver and also in California, when all those bases were being, they offered them to the oil companies to build refineries, and they wouldn't take it.
No.
They wouldn't do it. They were already polluted, so that didn't really matter. You know, the land was already butchered by the army that was there. So you build a refinery there. Nope.
Don't want to do that.
Too much supply.
Yeah, and by the way, in regard to what we were talking about with the Germans and stuff, Jim just noted, he said, look at what they did for our space program. On the other hand, having sustained World War II's damage, they don't want any more, and they have the sense to prevent the same. You know, smart people. Smart people. And yet we remain absolutely enthralled, as you note, Andy, to this toxic relationship with hydrocarbons.
The Germans have a memory. you know, they keep a history. At least one thing is they do a nice job with their history, and they know what happened during World War One. Where here, you know, our history gets butchered when you have that moron Sarah Palin saying the British were being warned. I mean, what a stupid...
And Michelle Bachmann saying that the shot heard round the world was fired in Concord, New Hampshire. Yeah, that's, you know, you just look up. Well, there's a video out there. And I don't have any problem mentioning it simply because we've got a grown-up audience that knows what dirty words sound like, and there's plenty of them. If you go to YouTube and you just look up the phrase Dale Jr. fan, you will see a woman watching a NASCAR race on television, Andy.
Dale Jr. fan, okay.
Okay. D-A-L-E-J-R fan. You'll see a woman watching a NASCAR race on television. If you can watch this roughly 5 minutes of video and be done with it and not look up and say, the culture is dead, America is doomed, you are far more of an optimist than I. I mean, it's pitiful. If you think about people in other countries, and no. We have a woman who actually puts a pillow on the ground in front of the television and kneels upon it with her hands clasped in front of her, praying for Dale Earnhardt Jr. to win a race in which a bunch of white guys go around a track turning left a lot. So I only mention that not as a total non sequitur, but I mention that as a counterpoint, if you will, to your statement that the Germans have a memory, the Germans have an educational system, and we have women who pray in front of the television for race car victories.
You know, like everything else here, the television is like, it's an opiate, and sports has, you know, always been an opiate to the masses, and here it is again. Just something else to put your... consciousness on, you know, issues that and things that are so non-consequential and such baloney, and that's where you put your energies. It's just such a crime, you know, such a crime.
Yeah,
the opiate of the masses.
Yeah, never mind religion, it's television. And that's, you know, that's why Michael Franti has that wonderful song called Television, the Drug of the Nation. I've played it from time to time. That's worth checking out, too. Andy, good to hear from you, brother.
Well, just real quick, too. Jobless recovery.
New normal. New normal.
Ah, that's just great. And again, going back to the Germans, hey, they have like 7% unemployment. They have the lowest unemployment in 20 years, the Germans. They can't get enough workers, yet we're going up and they're going heading down. Maybe there's something wrong with our trade policies. Maybe they ought to start talking. Maybe Austin Goolsbee, instead of talking about giving more tax cuts, which I heard him say, we just got to give business more tax cuts. It's stupid. It's the most stupid-ass thing I've ever heard. God, it's the Hamilton plan is what we need. We need a decent damn trade policy. And let's get the government creating jobs, for God's sake, because the private business is not going to do it here.
No, they're going to sock it. Every time we give private business money, they're going to sock the money away.
Nuts, of course, that's what they've been doing.
Why would we expect them to do anything else? That's the thing that makes me nuts. Why would you expect them? Why would it, not you, but why would anybody expect them to do anything else? It's what they're in business to do, sock away money.
Right. They're just holding it in cash. A couple billion dollars in cash. All right, Bob, great show, man.
Thanks, man.
Have a great trip and take care of yourself. Be safe.
All right, thanks, Andy.
Right.
Bye now. Andy calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita.
I got a couple of stories from down in my neck of the woods.
Oh, good. The Florida Dispatch.
Yeah. The Penny story made me think of one I heard last night. As a couple in Hillsborough County, which, you know, is the Tampa area, and they bought them a home, and they actually paid cash. Did you hear about this?
Yes, I did. And then, who was it? Bank of America foreclosed on them anyway?
Yeah. So they had to go to court and all, and they finally proved their case, and the judge ordered Bank of America to pay them $2,500 for their expenses that they had. So they waited and waited, and they called and they called, and no check. So they decided that they would foreclose on the Bank of America, and actually did get the bank closed. But even the
Didn't their lawyer show up with sheriff's deputies and a writ of execution and started levying the furniture in the bank and stuff?
Yeah, they were going to take the furniture out, and the guy that was the president came and he couldn't get in, and so they started writing them a check on the spot, pretty much. What I understand. And you know what their excuse was? The lawyer that was handling the case was no longer their lawyer. Ha, ha, ha.
Ah, well. Yeah, it couldn't possibly be because Bank of America is too big to be trifled with, right?
Right. But I said, good for them. And then the other one was, we have a local sheriff deputy, a lady, or a woman, whatever you might want to call her. She got caught, I don't know if she's working in juvenile hall or what, but she was caught, filming, young girls, and she was whipping them. And her excuse was that, she was an ex-Marine and that she was teaching them a lesson.
Oh, dear God. Wonder what lesson that might have been, Juanita.
I don't know, but I'm sure she enjoyed it.
You know, I wouldn't have dared said that in a million years, but I don't think anybody was expecting that from you.
Really?
That's what makes you so special.
You get away with a lot when you get old.
No.
So, hope to be able to say what you want to say. That's what I used to hear people say that, and I thought, boy.
Right.
But anyway, and the other one I wanted to say, I know I don't have much time, but our dear governor.
Yes, Rick, unindicted co-conspirator Scott,
right.
Yes.
Yeah, I call him Governor Skinhead, but nobody else seems to appreciate that but me.
Oh, I do.
But anyway, when he signed our new, whatever you call it, budget for mm-hmm. the year, it was supposed to be, you know, he's a Tea Party guy.
Oh, he's a teabagger from way back.
Yeah.
He was teabagging when teabagging wasn't cool.
Right. And it was, now this is what was told, and I heard this before it happened, that he had left orders with the state police to arrest anybody that looked like a liberal, that they weren't welcome. And there were some people arrested. And now they're saying, well, I didn't say for you to do that. And this one said, I didn't say it. You know, nobody wants to claim that they asked the police to do that, so I don't know what. But anyway, they did. Somebody asked them to, and they did it.
Just works
but
that way.
I don't know what a liberal looks like.
Right. How do you find that out? Well, I guess it's, you know, but if you're wearing a no nukes button or a save the Venezuelan Vestal Virgins button or.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, well,
yeah.
Only liberals wear them things.
Uh-huh. And I'd like to say something about Wiener.
Yes.
You know, he's one of the few that stood up for us.
Right. So naturally, that's who Breitbart goes after.
That's why they did it. You know, that's
well, what they do is that it's just like military tactics. They probe for weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently somewhere along the way, it was determined that he liked to tweet things.
Yeah.
And then it was game on.
Yeah. It was easy game, wasn't it?
Yeah, but the thing is, they're going to have a lot. They got to find a lot more before they begin to balance the scales of all their criminals and sexual predators and general weirdos and sickos and psychos.
Well, does, like somebody said, none of us are perfect. We've all got feet of clay. But, you know,
now,
it just, huh?
No, go ahead.
Go ahead with what you were going to say.
No, 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 please.
Well, it just, well, now I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that.
Okay. but anyway, I do want to tell you this if I have time.
Okay.
It won't take long. I
okay.
My son's best friend is, he was military. He was a corpsman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a Marine, but he was with the Marines. And he was in the first Iraqi war, and he did 5 tours of duty in Iraq. And he has some, you know, problems where he sees somebody that's not there, you know, like at bed at night, and he's being attacked and so forth. Well, it took a long time, and that while he was going to the VA here, that they wanted him to take some medication, you know, for that. And he was kind of afraid to. But he finally decided to do it, and it started happening, you know, at least to sleep at night. So now he's out in California, and I think, I know he first moved to Sacramento. Now, he's supposed to be out there temporarily, trying to make some money with his brother. And, so he hadn't been able to go to the VA out there, but he'd been getting his prescriptions from down here, and then they said he would have to go out there. And so he went, and they said, well, you haven't been coming, and we can't do anything about that. And he said, well, first of all, he felt like just going rant and raving mad, you know, but he held back, and he said, what am I supposed to do? And the woman that was supposed to be counseling told him, said, we'll get a different pillow. That was supposed to be solved. So anyway, then he called them, and they told him, well, come on down, we'll see what we'll do. He said, right now, if I drive, I won't make it there, because he was so shook up. And, you know, when you're going off of medication, especially that kind, you know, and not knowing.
No, you don't cold turkey.
Get it again. Yeah, and especially if you're having trouble getting it again. Anyway, so then they told him to come. He got somebody to take him. They sent him from department to department, passing the book.
Ran him around and ran him around.
So he punched a hole in the wall. And they wrote him up.
Oh, I'm sure.
And so now it's still in Wavering, you know. So I don't know if they've got more problems out there with the VA. I remember when Susan's husband passed that she was talking about how rotten they treated him up where he was and everything, and that man was in World War II.
Yeah.
He was also in combat.
Right.
Yeah. And then another, you know, I'm just putting that out there, but I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if it's worse. It must be worse out in California.
Well, I don't know. I think
it used to be.
No, what I think what you're seeing is an overall effort, especially with all the budgetary stuff, to make everything that smacks of a social safety net fail, including things like doing right by veterans. There is no one among America's weak, weary, and wounded that the Republican Party, Juanita, does not outright despise.
Yeah, but they don't mind using them.
No, it's there for them. They're special people.
Like
they're God's.
It's
no,
for,
they're
them to look at.
Right, they're God's chosen people, Juanita.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I couldn't help but think about what Susan said, you know, about her husband, how they had treated him so dirty.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sad to me. Those are the people, especially the ones who served in combat. Those are the people who should get our best, because we've taken the best from them. We've taken their lives away,
and
whether
that,
they're wounded or not.
And that is an absolute, that's an absolute gem of a statement. I got to run on, Juanita, but thank you very kindly.
Okay.
All right.
I hope Fancy's not in that fire thing.
I hope. We'll probably hear from her now.
Okay, doke.
Thank you.
Take care. I love you.
Love you too, Juanita. Bye now.
Bye bye.
Juanita calling from Central Florida. A couple of emails real quick. On the issue of pennies and so forth, Robert writing in from Australia, he says the 1 and 2 cent coins were removed from circulation here in Australia back in the mid-90s. The government of the day said they were more trouble than they were worth. We now have a system called rounding up or down. If the bill's 492, you pay 490. If the bill's 493, you pay 495. Only if you pay in cash, of course. Most people pay via electronic funds transfer to avoid this. I imagine someone, i.e. the banks, are making a fortune out of this. So paying with 1 or 2 cent coins as a form of protest, hey, you can't do that in Oz. And then as a P.S., my June 20th contribution will be there regardless, Bob. I suggest others pick a date and do the same. And many thanks, because we are now at $45 for the evening, and thank you very much. And I'm sorry to beat on this, but with me not behind the microphone, knowing what we have to deal with every month, it gets more than a little bit scary. David writing in from Tennessee, Germans and the business world. Pay attention to this, because this is so true. This goes to the very heart of what was being discussed. David says, I had way more than a passing acquaintance with the Mercedes crew that oversaw the building of their SUVs near Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Once over drinks, I asked about what sort of person got the praise at a cocktail party populated by business types, German business types. Who has the real status among German management? I will never forget it, says David. We still value those that make things. America seems to value the one that pushes paper for profit, never minding what it means to the future of the country. Worship at the throne of accountants and such? Never. Those bastards just step in and bayonet the wounded after the battle. So says David, yes, they are smart. And yes, they have a memory. And so that brings us to the end of this evening's program. Thank you very kindly for all of the myriad ways in which you participate. Thanks for your contributions. Thanks for your calls, your emails, your participation in the chat room. Don't think for an instant that I'm not going to miss being behind the mic, especially for periods this long, this extensive. I'll try to be back Thursday night, if at all possible, but that's a real iffy proposition. So stay in touch, please. And I'll let you know if there's any change in status or change in circumstance. Okay? Thanks to Lottie in the chat room, our moderator there, who also turned me on to the station in Atlanta. Really glad to know about those guys. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, and to Susan for getting the schedule up. You can find it there at headonradionetwork.com. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. She's getting better and better, by the way. So thanks for all your good thoughts. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo, at headonradionetwork.com, a cavalcade of crazy. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, webmaster, web designer, man of many hats. And thanks to Ben Birch at whiterosesociety.org. Ben still has a fundraiser going on, and the little thermometer graphic is not hardly moving up at all. I'm just saying. But everything that streams, streams because of Ben Birch, and he never, ever sends a bill. Thanks, of course, always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, and that's no joke. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina,